All right, folks, with that real fast, we will call long range to order. If we could please take the roll.
Chairman Mike Hawkins.
Here.
Senator Mike Cuff.
Here.
Senator Ellie Boldman.
Excused.
Representative Jim Hamilton.
Here.
Senator Kerry Smith.
Here.
Representative Sue Vinton.
Excused. All righty. Let's start off. Folks online, can you hear me all right? Do I need to move this closer? Doing okay? Excellent. So to start off here while I'm trying to set myself up as well, do we have any updates from anyone? Jason, Russ, Kathy, anybody?
Mr. Chairman, I just might mention that I believe you've received answers from Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Do you find those in front of you?
I just got those before the meeting. So.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, good. So you've got those answers, and we'll be watching for the answers to the questions raised yesterday in the university hearing. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have for right now.
Excellent.
Sorry.
Oh, you're golden. No worries. Russ, do you have anything for the good of the order? I see Jason is also unmuted, but we'll go with Russ first.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. We have a great slate of projects the last 3 days. Great slate for you to hear this morning. And Marina will be the master of ceremonies for you once we get to that point to navigate through the agencies and the projects.
All right. As a quick heads up for our folks online, yesterday, me being really good at this job and everything, I had told some folks out in the hallway that as we were closing down for the day, I would allow them to come in as general proponents for everything that we had been discussing, and then the time was getting up towards 12, and I wanted to make sure that Section E wasn't stuck longer than they needed to be, so I just broke the meeting up and completely forgot to let them come in and testify. So at some point today, they will be showing back up, and I will be making time for them to come in and testify. So when that happens, I guess, yeah, don't be terribly surprised. Do we have anything from committee members before we start off for the morning? Jason, what about yourself?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just wanted to follow up on the museum project yesterday, the O&M that was brought up there. After further discussions with Mr. Catherman and Mr. Muffet from the commissioner's office, I think we do support the O&M for that project. Fall off at this point, it seems like there's some time changes along with the fact that it was a previously authorized project, just with an increase in authority this session. Just wanted to get an update.
Mr. Chairman.
Vice Chair Cuff.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for point of information, I'd like to put this out. I brought up a couple of questions yesterday in regard to some of the projects, and I understand, and I did have a conversation with Commissioner Christians on this, and they're, what I would like to do, I understand that there has been a project at Western Montana College that has been pretty well vetted, and it's in regard to Block Hall, and I wonder if I could get the kind of information that we happen to have available regarding, that's a health and safety issue, I think a fairly serious one, or potentially. And I realize there are many, but at any rate, I believe this one has been vetted pretty well, and I would like to get whatever information might be available for it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Kathy, if you can maybe work with Russ or Clayton Christians or whoever that might be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Russ shaking his head up and down. Russ, that sound about good to you?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Marina and I will work with Jason and Kathy to get that information open to you about that project. Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Thank you.
And do we have Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we leave the O&M question, I was trying to reconcile these numbers on the sheet that we have. On the front was required funding for maintenance, the code. Then on the back had the orange block. And even at the 44% share, I can't seem to make the numbers match the numbers in the book. Can somebody explain that?
Jason, would you like to take first crack at that? I mean, it may just be a situation where we might need to have Representative Hamilton or us come down and meet you and peruse some numbers. Depending on how today goes, we shall have a little bit of free time here coming up on the subcommittee's hand, so that can certainly be something that we end up doing. But Jason, you want to take a crack at it?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, I am happy to put something together that kind of compares what's in the book versus what was on the orange block that you're referring to on the paper from yesterday, as well as what's in the change package, if that works. Where I can either hopefully have that to you by the end of committee today, if not soon after, if that works for you.
That'd be fine. Thank you.
All right. Anything else from members of the committee or our immediate family online? Okay, seeing none. Do we have somebody from the Office of Public Instruction on the line with us to start off today? I know that there's somewhat of a busy schedule on that end, and I know we have them as first, but just wanted to make sure that they were ready to go. Am I going to take that as a yes? I think I will probably take that as a yes. So with that, then, why don't we go ahead and start off with our project list for the day and turn it over to Marina, I believe.
Thank you, Chairman Hopkins and committee. Good morning. Today we're going to wrap up with starting off with OPI, MSDB, Montana School for the Deaf and Blind, Department of Justice, Department of Revenue, the DNRC, Department of Livestock, and Department of Ag, Montana Department of Transportation, and Department of Corrections. And as you had noted, Ken Bailey from OPI, he's going to do this, and then he's got to be like two or three other places at once. So we're going to let Ken go first. And so I will do just like I've done in the past, putting the screens up. He's going to talk about the project that OPI has. So I would go ahead and like to introduce Mr. Ken Bailey, please.
Oh, Ken, good morning. Hear that you have somewhat of a busy day ahead of you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ken Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Office of Public Instruction. And I want to thank the architecture and engineering guys for all the help that they've given the OPI on this. I have to say that in my years here, I've never appeared before the Long Range Planning Commission before, or subcommittee, I mean. This is an interesting project, I guess. It's a request for $300,000 to basically fix the sewer and well system at the Montana Learning Center. The Canyon Ferry Dam, when it was built, in the aftermath of a project like that, the Bureau of Reclamation for the federal government puts together a plan for the land that they have disturbed and put back in place that it is supposed to be a community plan to offer benefits to the community. And as part of that, over the years, these buildings at this site were originally used to house workers for the dam, and then I think became a hunting camp, and then hit on this idea of making it into a summer education camp, which it currently is. So back in 1996, there was a transaction, I guess you would say, where the OPI signed a lease with the Bureau of Reclamation, and that lease basically has no money changing hands unless there's some costs involved. And it requires the OPI to use the space for education purposes and for nonprofit reasons. So the OPI in turn has a lease with the Montana Learning Center that equals the term of the lease with the Bureau of Reclamation. The first lease was from 96 through 2016, and in 2016, both of these leases were renewed for another 20 years. The Montana Learning Center runs summer camps that are education-oriented, and they do some fantastic things there. This request for $300,000 is basically to fix what's wrong with them so that they can continue to operate. And what's not in the write-up that that the architecture and engineering provided that's extremely important is that one of the things that happened with the original lease with the Bureau of Reclamation is that the ownership of the buildings on the site was transferred to the OPI. And so the OPI, for example, maintains hazard insurance, not liability insurance, but hazard insurance on this structure. And that lease requires the OPI to basically remove all the buildings and return the land to its natural state if we ever stop operating on the site. As part of this study, there was also a consideration of what if we had to tear everything down, and that cost was estimated, again, by somebody working for architecture and engineering, not the OPI, at $350,000. So if we don't do this project and we won't be able to continue operating with the current setup, because we're really operating under a permit from DEQ right now that we've promised to fix, then we'll look at then what happens, because if we don't operate something on the site, we're obligated to tear down all the buildings. So with that as, I should mention too that the OPI over the years, we have spent some money on the site. I think the most we ever spent in 1 year was around $70,000. And as part of that, we replaced some roofs on the property, and we did a hazard assessment as well, kind of an update on it. So basically, unless there's something else that architecture and engineering wants to add at this point, that's our perspective on this. We think that the Montana Learning Center does great things there. We'd like to see it continue to operate, and we sure wouldn't want to have to come back to the legislature and ask for an appropriation to tear everything down. I'm obviously available for questions, and I know that the director of the Montana Learning Center is here for the public comment period, and when I have to leave, Barb Quinn from the Office of Public Instruction will remain in case there are some further questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you. And did we have somebody else from the department side who's looking to talk on the project? I see Tom with his hand raised. Heather, is that for comment on the project, or is that for?
I'm not entirely sure. I did allow him to talk.
Let's ask Tom himself. Good morning, Tom.
Morning. Is my camera supposed to be on?
That is up to yourself, sir.
One moment. That was my fault.
That's perfectly fine. Tom, did we get you back?
Yeah, I'm...
Might be experiencing some technical difficulty, sir. Yeah. And as soon as we get him back, we shall take that proponent testimony. That'll happen. Heather, did we lose Tom on the hole? I'm not sure that I see him on the call anymore.
I don't see him on here either, so I'm looking here. I did just promote Dari Quirk.
Okay, let's try out Dari. Dari, can you hear us? You are still muted, it looks like.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I may have raised my hand at the wrong time. I want to speak in favor of the project during public comment.
Well, it looks like we have a slight bit of downtime while we get the rest of our proponent testimony organized. So why don't you go ahead and talk to us right now?
Oh, all right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can everyone hear me? Can you and the committee hear me okay?
We can indeed.
Okay, wonderful. Chairman Hopkins, Vice Chair Cuff, and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Derry Quirk, and I live in Missoula. It is a pleasure to be here this morning. I appreciate this opportunity to share with you why, as the parent of a longtime camper and now junior counselor at Montana Learning Center at Canyon Ferry, referred to as the Learning Center in the rest of my testimony, I consider the Learning Center to be a true treasure in our treasure state. Because of the important educational and transformative work done at the Learning Center, it is crucial that the $300,000 currently included in the long-range building program budget in HB5 to fund the replacement of the water and sewer system in the state-owned buildings on the Learning Center's campus be retained to ensure that the Learning Center can continue to flourish and grow. My family and I moved to Missoula almost 8 years ago when my son Colton was going into the fifth grade. He is now a senior at Hellgate High School in Missoula. Colton has participated in programs at the Learning Center for the past 6 years. He began with just a week-long STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math camp the summer after sixth grade, exploring activities such as Lego robotics and hydro engineering. This past summer, he participated in 2 sessions as a camper and 4 sessions as a junior counselor, spending a total of 6 weeks at the Learning Center. When Colton first attended one of the Learning Center's camps, he was very excited about the STEM activities, but he was very shy and nervous about being away from home. But when I picked him up at the end of his week-long camp, he immediately asked if he could please go back the following summer. As the summers went on, Colton attended camp at the Learning Center for additional weeks each summer. Colton has developed an interest in physics and astronomy because of the Learning Center's astronomy park and astronomy camp. Without exception, we have always been so impressed with the quality of the instructors and the level of inquiry of the programming at the Learning Center. Additionally, the setting is so picturesque and provides the campers with the opportunity to hike along the hills and canoe or boat on Canyon Ferry Lake, a great balance to the STEM activities. As a parent, dropping off Colton at the Learning Center each summer, I know that he will have a positive and engaging experience. These types of programs are few and far between, and we are so fortunate to have such high-quality programming right here in Montana. Colton's experiences at the Learning Center's camps led him to the Western Aerospace Scholars, or WAS, program. At the urging of the Learning Center's executive director, Ryan Hanahoe, Colton signed up for this program, which is offered to high school sophomores and juniors through the Museum of Flight and the University of Washington. The WAS program was designed in partnership with NASA and explores the history of space, space travel, and NASA. Through this 2-semester course, Colton got to really explore something that he is passionate about and receive college credit during high school. And as part of completing each semester in good standing, Colton was able to participate in the WAS Summer Residency Program at the Learning Center twice. During these week-long programs, Colton connected with other students in Montana that shared his same interests, met STEM professionals, prepared a presentation on a proposed mission to Mars, and learned more about deep space viewing and imaging. The Learning Center has helped Colton develop from a shy camper into a confident junior counselor and aspiring STEM professional. In completing his college application essays this fall, Colton often used his experiences at the Learning Center in his responses. Colton plans to study physics as an undergraduate, go on to graduate school for his PhD in astrophysics, and hopes to teach one day at the college level. I believe that the Learning Center has played a pivotal role in Colton's educational and career plans, and I also believe that the Learning Center has had a similar impact on many of the tens of thousands of other students that have been fortunate enough to have attended programs at the Learning Center over the years. Without your full and immediate support of the funding to replace the Learning Center's water and sewer system, the Learning Center may be faced with closing its doors. That would be a tremendous loss for students, parents, and teachers across Montana. As a parent, I couldn't be more grateful for the Learning Center, and I hope that my testimony here today has illustrated just how special the Learning Center is. Thank you so much for your time and for your thoughtful consideration of including the funding for this much needed infrastructure project at the Learning Center in this fiscal year's budget. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We certainly appreciate your time here this morning. I see that we have Tom back with us, so we would go to Tom really quick, and then we'll go to questions from the committee for Ken before, as I understand it, he has to be in a thousand other places here really fast. So, Tom, are you back with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Good morning.
Okay, great. Good morning, Chairman Hopkins, Vice Chair Cuff, the members of the committee. My name is Tom Pedersen. I'm a longtime resident of Helena, and I'm here to testify in favor of the remaining $300,000 currently included in the long-range building program of House Bill 5 to replace the water and sewer system for the state-owned buildings on the campus of the Montana Learning Center. I'm retired after working 39 years as a teacher and coach at Capital High School here in Helena. I've had the honor of being Montana Biology Teacher of the Year, Helena Teacher of the Year, and the 2012 Montana Teacher of the Year. I owe much of my career success to the Learning Center. I count myself as fortunate to have been asked to teach at the Learning Center shortly after its creation by two Helena Science teachers in 1984. I taught several summer youth programs as well as college credit courses for teachers under the auspices of the University of Montana and Montana State University. We used nature as a classroom and did more lab science in one summer that was normally done in an entire regular school year. Can you still hear me?
We can indeed.
Okay. I also oversaw the Learning Center's biological research program for 17 summers. Under that program, highly motivated high school students conducted original academic biological research over a 7-week period on a wide range of topics. These young scientists prepared and submitted papers about their research and also gave presentations about their research to various national academic science organizations at various national student science competitions, such as the Academy of Sciences, Science Symposium, Science Fairs, and the Westinghouse Science Talent Search. Over the years, I was privileged to be able to travel with these young scientists to various cities, including Salt Lake City, New Orleans, San Francisco, Miami, and to institutions of higher education, including West Point, MSU, and U of M. During the time I oversaw the program, these students won awards at the state, national, and international level. The Learning Center has been and continues to be a phenomenal incubator for developing students' wonder, creativity, critical thinking, hard work, and perseverance. Teaching at the Learning Center during the summers made me a much better teacher, and I gave these young students, scientists, a tremendous start in their future science education and careers. Many of these students went into various science, technology, engineering, math, STEM fields, and became scientists, school teachers, college and university professors, medical professionals, conservation specialists, or other STEM professionals. In 1998, two Helena science teachers who founded the Learning Center and the then supervisor of the Helena National Forest developed and began the Youth Forest Monitoring Program, or YFMP. While the YFMP is formally housed at and primarily funded through the Montana Discovery Foundation, the Learning Center has been an active partner in the YFMP since its inception. The program gives interested high school students a summer stipend to monitor and report on water quality, soils, invasive species, and wildlife in the Helena National Forest. I've been involved with YFMP as a teacher and crew leader for the past 17 years. YFMP now has 3 crew leaders, 16 participating students, and an award-winning director employed by the Forest Service. Many students who have participated in YFMP have continued their science education in college and have gone on to careers in environmental conservation fields, tackling environmental issues such as fire, drought, climate change, and invasive species. Over the past several years, under the Executive Director Ryan Hannibal's leadership and continued commitment to science and math education of the Learning Center Board of Directors, the Learning Center has expanded its offerings to include giving students, teachers, and members of the public access, both on-site and remotely, to high-grade viewing and robotic telescopes, as well as adding various student educational programs funded by NASA. If the Learning Center's water and sewer system is not replaced as soon as possible, it will not have potable water to drink and use at the Learning Center, will have to shut down, eliminating a unique and important science and math education resource in Montana that provides educational enrichment activities to well over 1,000 students and teachers directly each year. I strongly encourage you to vote to retain the $300,000 in funding in House Bill 5, Learning Center's Water and Sewer System Replacement Project. The past, present, and future students and teachers that have been and will be educated at the Learning Center will be thankful and forever grateful that this special place can continue its mission. Thank you for your time and attention.
Hey, thank you, Tom. Sorry about our little internet connection issues, whatever it was there for a little bit, but glad to have you with us here this morning. With that, I think we've got a couple folks here in the room. Why don't we go ahead and bring them up to the podium real fast. Good morning. And then if you could say and spell your name for the record.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, my name is Ryan Hanahoe, H-A-N-N-A-H-O-E. I am the Executive Director for the Montana Learning Center. At the end of my testimony, I prepared a written statement that I'd like to share with the committee members and give you a copy of, as well as some information on our educational programs at the Learning Center.
Please.
Thank you so much for having us today. You know, we've been working with the Learning Center, at Canyon Ferry since 1984. It started out as the Canyon Ferry Limnological Institute, and since then, it's now known as the Montana Learning Center, and we have impacted tens of thousands of Montana's kids and thousands of Montana's teachers. Last year alone, even during COVID, we trained 250 teachers remotely, reaching an estimated 25,000 students. Most notably of that, 30 of those teachers were from all 7 Native American reservations here in Montana. That is a part of our NASA work. We are one of 2 educational partners with NASA under the Northwest Earth and Space Science Pipeline here in Montana, the other being MSU. And as a part of our NASA work, we oversee the state's robotic challenges. In addition to the Western Aerospace Scholars Program, which is a college course for high school students and a research experience at the Learning Center. And then we also oversee the teacher training. In addition to our NASA work, at the Learning Center, we offer summer learning camps for kids. Last summer, we led the industry standard development for COVID protocols for Montana summer camps with nonprofits. And right now we're doing that for the child care setting in Montana. With our summer learning camps for kids, we typically average about 350 kids coming to those camps. They come from all over the state of Montana, from Eureka all the way down to Ekalaka. And so it's a real great time. Many of our instructors are award-winning teachers, including Teachers of the Year. The current Teacher of the Year, Christy Borge, who will testify later, she is from Polaris, is also one of our award-winning instructors, too. And we really pride ourselves on having a low student-to-teacher ratio. For every 8 kids, we have a teacher, and our instructors are certified. We employed 29 employees last year. That number will go up this year. Our work is very impactful. In addition to summer camps, we also are able to rent the facility out for educational groups like YNFMP under the Montana Discovery Foundation in our shoulder seasons, where they can come and use the facility for educational purposes. Finances raised from that helps offset the cost of our summer learning camps for kids for parents. And typically, our costs are offset by half, so it cuts the cost in half. And so we're allowed to offer many scholarships. I've been associated with the Learning Center since 2012. My trade is I'm a middle school science teacher, my work got to be, so consuming with the Learning Center, thankfully, with our work with NASA, since we are a NASA partner. I'm the PI on that grant for Montana with MSU. It got to be a full-time opportunity. And, even since I've been involved with the Learning Center, we have been able to see students go on and become STEM professionals. Later today, if Julie Clay comes on, she's a STEM professional at Montana State University that will talk to you about how the Learning Center impacted her. And so, you know, with the $300,000 appropriation, that's to put a new water and sewer system in at the Learning Center that allows us to continue to operate. If that doesn't occur, then, you know, we'll be faced with closing our doors at the Canyon and Ferry Lake facility. If you've never been to the Learning Center, we invite you to be up there. The cottages were built in 1948. Even though there's no exchange of funds between the state and our nonprofit organization, the nonprofit organization invests yearly in maintenance of the facilities, and that's mainly in terms of maintenance staff that we have that keep care of the grounds, care of the buildings, and that typically is $30,000 to $50,000 yearly investment from our nonprofit to upkeep the property. And so we have a strong investment in the property. You know, we do exciting work for Montana's students and teachers as we work to build Montana's STEM workforce. You know, we've got a lot of community support. Even our Governor's Foundation supports our NASA work financially. So, you know, we're just here today to advocate, you know, for the Learning Center to continue its work at the Canyon Ferry Lake facility, and then also for the $300,000 appropriation for the new water and sewer system, because without that, it is a public health hazard not to have drinking water or polluted drinking water. And so, you know, we've been taking precautions ever since the DEQ test results came back, where we bring water off site. But now is the time where, you know, a new water and sewer system needs to be in place. Otherwise, you know, the Learning Center needs to close. And if that's the case, you know, it'll severely impact our organization and the work that we do with students and teachers. At this time, I'll open up for any questions. I appreciate your time and your consideration in this matter.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate your time here this morning. Do we have anybody else that is looking to testify as a proponent, or I guess otherwise? It's kind of rare to see opponents. And we'll go ahead and get to yourself here really fast. I just wanted to check if we had anybody else on Zoom. I apologize. I got a couple bumping up. Okay. Let's go ahead and take yourself here in the room. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Cuff, members of the committee. My name is John Dilliard, spelled J-O-N-D-I-L-L-I-A-R-D. I'm a longtime Montana resident, and for the sake of transparency, I retired from my position as the chief of the Water Supply Bureau at the Department of Environmental Quality over a year ago. So my comments today are strictly provided by me as an individual, and my views no way represent those of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. I appreciate this opportunity to present this testimony as to why the water and sewer system needs to be repaired or actually replaced at the Montana Learning Center. When I first learned what the Learning Center was doing and its boots on the ground, hands-on, collaborative educational efforts it was providing for Montana's children and for the teachers, it piqued my interest. The fact that it was also located on the shores of the Canyon Ferry, Canyon Ferry Lake, and its recreational opportunity just made that even better. Because of all that, I eventually found myself on the board for the Montana Learning Center. About 2 years ago, the Learning Center started seeing bacteria in their drinking water supply. After a lot of investigation and study, it was determined that that bacteria was coming from the wastewater system for the center. So essentially, the water going down the drains into the waste system was leaking out of the wastewater system and getting into the water that was used then to drink at the system. So the need for something to be done is quite obvious there. The system that was there, or that is there, was built about 70 years ago. And the wastewater system consists of clay pipes that, when they were put in, was expected to have a life expectancy of about 20 years, possibly 30 in under good conditions. Well, it's been much longer than that. And I'd like to relay just a quick anecdote about clay pile systems, or tile systems, that actually occurred right here in the city of Helena. They took a camera and run it down some of their sewer lines. When they got in there, they discovered that the top half of the pipe was still in place, but the bottom half of the pipes were completely gone. Well, this is the same type of system, and they did run a camera down the systems at the Montana Learning Center, and the pipes are deteriorating, they're coming apart, they have intrusion of roots that is in very poor system, so there's no question that it is contaminating the water that it's leaking into there. So the need for the replacement of the system is great. Considering what the Montana Learning Center provides for the state of Montana, our children and our teachers, and the educational opportunity you can find nowhere else, I believe that it is absolutely necessary that we continue the operation out there. And to do that, we need to replace the systems. So I hope you agree with me that the $300,000 currently in House Bill 5 budget is more than needed and more than acceptable for keeping this operation running. I thank you for this opportunity, and I will remain available for questions.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate it. During the interim, I believe that we added two people, Heather. Looks like one of them, or the first one that I saw, was Heath. Heath, can you hear us?
Good morning, Chairman. Can you hear me?
We can indeed.
Awesome. Good morning, Chairman Hopkins, Vice Chair Cuff, and members of the committee. My name is Heath Caldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L. I currently am a senior at Helena High School with a passion for the sciences. I was a camper for a number of years at Montana Learning Center at Canyon Ferry Lake, and more recently I've worked as a camp counselor for the Learning Center. I'm speaking to you today to advocate for the retaining of the $300,000 included in the long-range building program budget in HB 5 to fund the replacement of the entire water and sewer system at the Learning Center. Spending part of my summers at the Learning Center as a camper allowed me to explore my interest in various aspects of STEM subjects. Through my experiences at the Learning Center, I've also been able to make lifelong friendships with people who share the same passions I do while developing my social skills. The Learning Center teaches students in a way that a conventional school simply cannot do. The smaller student-to-staff ratio at the Learning Center, coupled with their access to the great outdoors, creates a unique and engaging learning experience that schools do not have the resources to accomplish. Through the Learning Center, for example, campers are able to participate in a variety of field trips to solidify their understanding of the concepts being taught. It was through the Learning Center's geology camp, in fact, that I developed my passion for the earth sciences. These camps help children and teenagers understand the true wonder of the sciences and how exciting they actually are. The Learning Center has also been very enthusiastic about supporting local youth in their scientific and public service endeavors. Numerous projects have been completed on the Learning Center's property. My own Eagle Scout project, for example, involved the construction of a wheelchair ramp for one of the recently constructed observatories. Because of the Learning Center's generous help, I was able to achieve a goal I had been working towards since the first grade, and now the facility is able to educate anyone and everyone about the wonders of astronomy. Funding the replacement of the Learning Center's current water and sewer system is an investment in the next generation of scientists, engineers, technologists, healthcare workers, and more. If no action is taken, the facility will likely be forced to shut down, and none of the community and student benefits I just described would be possible. Funding a new water and sewer system at the Learning Center would undoubtedly pay off in the long run. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. And I believe the other person that I saw was Julie. Is that sound about right? Julie, can you hear us? Good morning.
Good morning. Chairman Hopkins, Vice Chair Cuffin, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Julie Clay, That's C-L-A-Y. I am a lifelong Montana resident and currently a project manager at Montana State University in the University Information Technology Department's Project Management Office. However, this testimony is provided by me as an individual, and my views do not necessarily represent those of Montana State University. I appreciate the opportunity to present this testimony regarding the vital importance of retaining that $300,000 that's currently included in the Long Range Building Program budget in House Bill 5 to fund the replacement of the entire water and sewer system at the Montana Learning Center. If you'll indulge me, I'd like to tell you a story. Over 30 years ago, I heard about this place out at Canyon Ferry Lake on the Missouri River, where students of all ages could go to learn about science, hands-on, inside and outside of the classroom. I liked science and had a strong curiosity about the world around me. Luckily, I had parents who were big proponents of educational experiences. So when I wanted to go to science camp for 2 weeks in the summer of 1990, they made it happen. The 2 weeks I spent at Canyon Ferry Limnological Institute, the first of several precursors of what is now the Montana Learning Center, in 1990, were nothing short of incredible. We spent each day learning something new and different, such as water chemistry, topographical mapping, and the biology of the surrounding area. We spent most of our downtime near or on the water and lived in our swimsuits most days. You know, these moments are why I'm so comfortable in a boat and on the water today. During those 2 weeks, I discovered that I wanted to come back the following summer and participate in the Learning Center's six-week research program. But this was a huge decision because that was the summer before my senior year of high school. Something had changed in me, though, when I was at camp those 2 weeks in the summer of 1990. A spark had really ignited inside me. The following summer, I returned to the Learning Center to begin a research project. I studied arsenic accumulation in the crayfish of the Missouri River. While my friends were out sunning themselves and goofing off with their boyfriends, I was in the basement of the camp's chemistry facility running experiments. My experiments were intended to prove what's called the theory of bioaccumulation of toxic arsenic. My research went on well past the 6 weeks that were out at camp and went through my senior year. And even though I did not prove my theory, I learned things like graduate level chemistry, proper handling of invertebrates, and even how to operate a spectrophotometer. With the coaching of two incredible mentors, Marilyn Alexander, and who you just heard from a few minutes ago, Mr. Tom Pedersen, I wrote a professional research paper and I created an exhibit for competition. Without Marilyn and Tom, I would not have learned how to speak properly in front of the scientific community and how to do proper presentation style. I have to say that I wouldn't be the really great speaker that I am and be as comfortable as I am talking in front of hundreds and hundreds of people if it wasn't for Tom and Marilyn. Because of this project, this research project, I won the Butte Regional Science Fair that year. I was in the top 10 at the Montana State Science Fair. And I won first place in the environmental sciences category at the International Science and Engineering Fair. And that was something that was incredibly special because Montana hadn't had a first place at the International and Science and Engineering Fair for almost 10 years. I had the first place paper at the Montana Academy of Sciences, and I was also presented, because of that, presented for the National Academy of Sciences as a result. These are just a few of the awards that I received as a direct result of the research program at the Learning Center. I also received over $10,000 in scholarships and numerous additional accolades for my research. In addition, I met so many inspiring young scientists as I traveled throughout the country presenting my research, and I am still friends with some of these brilliant people today. This opportunity opened many doors for me, and I'm very, very, very grateful for it. The awards and the money were incredible, but what I learned about me, myself, and who I wanted to become was the most valuable part of this experience. Sacrificing some school and summer fun my senior year to feed my passion for science and learn some invaluable life skills was the best choice I could have ever made. As I look back on the time I spent at the Learning Center, there is nothing that I would trade for how these encounters shaped my career, the people who influenced my life, the adventures I experienced, and of course, the time on the lake and in the outdoors. Without the $300,000 in funding currently in the long-range building program budget in House Bill 5 to replace the infrastructure that's necessary, the Learning Center may be forced to be permanently shut down. Losing the Learning Center's incredible and unique opportunities for students and teachers would mean the end of potentially life-changing experiences like mine. For that reason, I strongly encourage you to retain this funding. I implore you to continue to retain this funding in the long-range program budget so that today's students and teachers and the student teachers of tomorrow can benefit from the many wonderful and amazing programs the Learning Center offers. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. With that, I go to questions, comments from members of the committee. Keep in mind that I believe that Ken had to run over to Section E, Chairman Beattie being a bit of a taskmaster as he is. With that, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Partly comment and part of question. You folks have done an extraordinarily good job of illustrating the benefits of this program, so thank you, all of you, for that. I'm very impressed. My question, it would be for Mr. Hanno. Mr. Chair, Mr. Hanno, slightly off the topic, but still kind of looking at the finances of this, and that is, how is your program supported? It looks like a large part of donations, but could you just give us a really brief look at that?
Yeah, you bet. And so the nonprofit organization, a lot of it is supported by donations, a lot of it by grants, but also, camper fees or fees that a school would pay to come and stay at the facility in our shoulder season. And what we do with that is we do the best that we can to not only invest in the students and teachers that we serve, but to also improve the facility.
Follow up. Mr. Chair, Mr. Hanno, then just a real rough breakdown of fees versus grants versus private donations, percentage-wise.
Yeah, so last year, percentage-wise, our grants were about a third of our overall, and then a third would be camper fees or facility fees, and then a third of our budget is our NASA work.
Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Vice Chair Cobb.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out that we do have 27 more projects to talk about here, and so we may want to think about how much time we're spending on each one.
It's a pretty solid point.
Thank you. Thank
any
you.
Further questions from members of the committee? Not seeing any, nor hands raised on time. Thank you all very much for your time this morning.
Thank you all for your time and consideration. Greatly appreciate it.
I appreciate it. And we'd look back to Marina. Oh, think we got you muted there.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
sometimes it's better that way. our next group of projects is for the Montana School for the Deaf and Blind. And here to speak on behalf of those projects is Paul Firthmeyer. Paul?
And we give it just a second here. Paul, can you hear us? Looks like you might be muted. There you go.
Yep. Sorry, now we're in. So thank you, Chair Hopkins and members of the committee. I have been on and do understand that you have a lot of projects to consider today. So I'm going to kind of wrap all my comments around the five projects that are before you. So for the record, my name is Paul Furthmyer, F-U-R-T-H-M-Y-R-E, and I serve as the interim superintendent at the Montana School for the Deaf and Blind. Montana School for the Deaf and Blind supports the proposed major repairs, including in both Governor Gianforte's budget and House Bill 5, sponsored by Representative Jones. Three of the bills include safety measures at our school. Most individuals that have daily interactions on campus have a visual or hearing impairment. In our Bitterroot building, MR06, you can see, is to update our fire sprinkling system in our Bitterroot building. For those of you that have not been on campus, Bitterroot is our main building on campus for education. It houses our administration programs, as well as all of our deaf programs and many of our blind programs. And that just to give some context about Bitterroot, it's very busy. Bitterroot is also a building used by the general public. We have Board of Public Ed meetings here off once or twice a year. We have sign classes and other local community groups that deal with deaf or blind disabilities use our Bitterroot building for meetings, and we do that at no cost. The second project that we'll talk to is the sprinkling system that is for our Mustang Center, which is our gym here on campus. And in that, it also talks about our dining room, which is in a different building. But the Mustang Center, if you have not been on campus, is our gym. This gym is used all the time by the public. We have local private schools that use our gym for their basketball games, volleyball games. We have homeschool organization use that gym. Our pool, since Great Falls Community lost their pool over a year ago, our pool is now also houses a swimming pool that is open to the public. Usually with COVID, it's shut down right now. But our Mustang Center does not have a current sprinkling system. And then again, our students with visual and hearing impairments use that building every day, and it is used constantly with the public. So that's MR11. MR27 is our campus-wide access control system. As we all know, we're living in a society where now keeping our kids and our campuses safe from outside threats is a big priority. With the campus-wide access control system, we would be able to have the card system that would allow us to program those cards that would help us maintain who's coming in and out of our doors. Since we have several buildings on campus, five main ones that we use, there's people in and out all the day. Sometimes doors are left open on accident and mishaps like that. So this would allow us for $120,000 to install an access control system that would improve the safety of our students, faculty, and overall staff. MR29, the Bitterroot Building lift replacement. Again, as mentioned earlier, the Bitterroot Building is our main building on campus. It is the building that's used by general public, and a majority of our educational classes are in that room. There is a basement in this building, and right now the basement is really not accessible for anybody needing any help with access. There is one. It's out of date. It's unpredictable. We don't use it. So we're proposing for $80,000 to get a building lift replacement, so members of the community and even our students in wheelchairs have access to that basement that we hold meetings in, do group activities. Then we store all of our educational materials down there, and that would provide access to all. And lastly is MR33, and this would be a combination project of something that was started prior. And there's some funds set aside for this, but it's a replacement of the roof at our cottage buildings. This was before my time, so I think Donna Schmidt is on the call with us, and maybe she can explain, or someone from Long Range Building might be able to help. But there was not enough money set aside previously to get this project done. Since that time, we have done some patching to our roofs, and it seems to be working, although we still do have some leaks in spot. But MR33 would allow for us to completely redo that roof, as well as do some increase the ventilation system in our cottages and things like that. So Chair Hopkins and members of the committee, I thank you for your consideration of these projects on behalf of MSDB, and I can answer any questions.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Paul. We appreciate your time today, and I think you might have just single-handedly got us back on schedule, so that's something that I've never been able to do. Congratulations to you for that. With that, we would ask for any questions from the committee. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank goodness we have time for questions. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I missed our speaker's name, but my question is, if you could please give us just a quick rundown on current enrollment there at the school and sort of growth or trend of that enrollment.
Absolutely. Chair Hopkins and members of the committee, last year we ended the year, so pre-COVID we had roughly about 43 students on our campus. Because of COVID, we had, like many typical schools, a lot of parents choose to homeschool kids for the year. I believe we were down to 38. But since January, we've increased two students, and we have two more students looking. And so we were supposed to have around 50 kids this year. But due to COVID, we ended up about 38, I believe. So, but the trends are looking up. One thing that is helping is we have changed the way we program our programs, or we're putting a lot of focus now. We serve kids starting at 18 months. We're putting a lot of focus on those young kids so we can get them caught up in time to be with their general peers. And then the other need that's out there right now that we have two students involved with this year and we'll have 10 next year is a transition program for those students that graduate from high school and working with Voc Rehab and Blind and Low Vision Services to get them ready for adult life. So to answer your question, it's about 38 right now. The trend line looks like it's going up. We just need to get out of this COVID so we can start getting those kids on campus.
Follow up,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Furthmeyer. The question then also would be looking back, say, over the last 5 years, where has the enrollment trended, stayed about the same, trended up over that time period?
It stayed in the high to the mid 40s until COVID.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm looking to see if we have any other hands raised online. I'm not seeing any, so I'll just say thank you very much for your time today, sir. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins.
Absolutely. You have a good day.
You as well.
And with that, I think we are moving forward to DOJ, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our next project is from the Department of Justice, Montana Law Enforcement Academy. And here to speak on behalf of the scenario training building they're requesting is Glenn Steiner, the administrator of Montana Law Enforcement Academy. Glenn?
Give Glenn a second there to get set up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Glenn Steiner, STINAR, and the administrator of the Montana Law Enforcement Academy here. Talk a little bit with you this morning about the DOJ's only project for the long-range building program, our indoor scenario training building. And really what this represents is a continuation of the master plan developed bioarchitecture and engineering in 2016, so it had several phases to it. Phase 1, 2, and 4 were the dorm building upgrades, cafeteria remodel, and some administrative office buildings. Now, keep in mind, the since DOJ took over the facility in 1997, really our goal has been to transform it from a school and detention facility for girls into a adult training center for peace officers and public safety community in Montana. You've got written testimony I provided there for you, just to kind of briefly go over that. You know, we recognize, first of all, with adult learners, that really the goal for us as training staff is to transform conceptual learning into practical applications. So what that means is that for adult learners to be able to do the things we ask them to do, they have to see the value and the practical application for themselves, and we do that through scenario-based training. So for as an example, our law enforcement basic class is 504 hours, and we spend about 30% of that time outside doing some scenario-based training to sort of take the learning experience from the classroom out to the field. So keep in mind that, you know, public safety calls for service or traffic stops are rarely static encounters, and that almost always require peace officers to make these decisions on the fly as the events unfold before them in real time. So we, what we see, and I tell the students on the very first day of training, is that the most important day of our time together is the day they go back to work. And I think that's certainly true. My staff and I work, we understand that for communities to be safe and do all the things that they need to do, they need public safety officers that can really be a part of the communities and protect them and do the things that they're being asked to do. So the reason for the scenario building are really twofold. One is that typically when we train activities, you know, there are certain, they all have a sequence of events that have to occur in order to get the successful resolution that we want. And we need to coach quality repetitions. What that means is that we, as much of the environment that we can control, the training environment, the more consistent we can make the repetitions. So keep in mind that, you know, if you've ever been subject to a traffic stop, you know, or where the law enforcement has shown up at your residence or place of employment for something, you know, that encounter may have only taken, you know, a few minutes or several minutes. But in the training environment, that to get all those parts put together and get enough quality reps so the students really understand what it is we're being asked them to do, that takes several days. And so what we really are excited about is the opportunity to control the environment. So we're really taking out some of the weather conditions and the safety hazards associated with snow and ice. And most importantly is that what we find is, you know, as an example, our law enforcement basic class has 60 students in it. They're together for 3 months at a time. That's just one of the programs we run. But when one gets a sniffly nose or a cold, typically we find that it transfers to others. So then when we have a group of students who are sick, it really degrades their training. And that leads to not maybe the outcomes that we had really wanted. So what we understand is that the quality of training we provide here directly relates to the quality of service that public receives in those communities. So what this building will allow us to do is replicate training events from beginning to end, where students can practice those repetitions of problem-solving, communications, you know, the applications of law, use of force to include de-escalation, you know, survival skills. We recognize that peace officers, it's a dangerous job, and the repetitions we provide them in training, you know, lead them to be able to protect themselves in those rapidly unfolding events out in the field. So we certainly see the need for that. Community policing, diversity, you know, crime scene investigations, witness and victim interviewing. So for a lot of reasons, we think this is a great idea. You know, it's not that we're going to totally remove real world training, you know, but what we find is that when we practice the reps in a controlled environment, those final scenarios are the end of course things that we do outside or in the real world environment, they go much better because the students are able to function in those the weather that we have here in Montana. You know, so as a state facility, I just want to mention that, you know, Montana Highway Patrol conducts their advanced academy out here. So there, as well as some other folks, probation and parole, they do a basic class here. So just you kind of running the numbers, we think that initially we could see about 28 to 30 weeks of steady use of that building. And obviously, once we have it, the more we'll use it and extend the invitations to other agencies like DCI to do narcotics, undercover drug investigation training here, gambling control division, you know, probation and parole can certainly do their community checks that they do. Another one would be motor carrier services or even the EMS community. So it's really an exciting thing for us as we sort of continue to execute the master plan that Marina and Russ and others did such a great job in preparing for us to kind of get us to where we have as the only facility in the state that trains law enforcement, something that we can really, when we graduate students, they're going to be prepared and ready to go. So I think subject to your questions, that concludes my presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. That we look to questions, comments from members of the committee, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Steiner. Mr. Chair, Mr. Steiner, the funding on this appears to be state special revenue, and how is that money accumulated in that state special revenue account?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, great question. So the prior to the establishment of our temporary registration permit fee special revenue account, we had been funded through surcharge, so criminal conviction surcharges. So once convicted, in addition to whatever the person who was convicted would pay in fines, they would pay a $10 surcharge, and that was meant to fund the academy. That was established in 2003. Never really got us to where we needed to be. So about 4 years ago, that was changed. So temporary registration permit fee. So that means when you buy something that has a license plate, wheels and a license plate, there's a temporary registration permit fee. So we, in-state fees, we collect $16.50 per temporary registration permit fee. So that's, and all that goes in that special revenue account. So the surcharge, conviction surcharge was discontinued, and then the temporary registration permit fees were enacted, and that's where that money comes from, if that answers your question, sir.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions, comments from the committee? Not seeing any hands raised online. Glenn, I'd like to thank you for coming to spend some time with us here this morning. We certainly appreciate yours.
Thank you, sir.
And with that, I believe that we are moving on to Department of Revenue.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Department of Revenue, we have the liquor warehouse expansion, and Becky will speak on that. Becky?
I will give Becky a chance here to get set up. And Becky, can you hear us? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Becky Schlau. I'm the administrator of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Division at the Department of Revenue. I have the distinct honor today of presenting to you the liquor warehouse expansion. The department operates a centralized warehouse in Helena for receiving, warehousing, and shipping liquor products to agency stores located throughout the state. This project would expand our existing warehouse by an additional 35,000 square feet. We are proposing to build the addition taller than the existing building to allow for an automated storage and retrieval system to be installed in the future for minimal cost, which would ultimately expand the useful life of the warehouse even further. The current 100,000 square foot warehouse in Helena was built in the late 1970s. We have experienced an average of around 3.5% growth in sales volume over the years. This project is necessary because the size of the current warehouse cannot sustain the continuous growth in liquor sales. Fiscal year 20 saw a growth rate of almost 9%, and fiscal 21 is up to at 15.31% in volume year to date as of Sunday. At the time this request was prepared, the analysis provided by industry experts indicated we were not expected to reach the million case mark for about 5 years. It is now likely that we will do that this year. Given the 5 years to reach the million case mark, it was determined that we would reach maximum capacity by 2027. But given we are likely to reach that mark this year, we are close to capacity now. This request is for $6.5 million to add an additional 35,000 square feet to our existing warehouse. There are also estimated operation and maintenance costs of $16,000 a year. The department has done many things over the years to maximize the efficiency of our current warehouse, including a recent software upgrade to a floating locator inventory system. We have outfitted the entire warehouse with racking to maximize the cubic space, and we have amended inventory policies to not have so much extra on hand, but we are out of options to gain more efficiency short of an expansion. Effects of this funding not being approved could lead to a loss of $2.5 million in liquor sales, liquor taxes and profits when we reach that million case mark, and an average of an additional 4.11% each year thereafter. If you haven't seen our warehouse, I would invite you to give me a call so we can set up a tour for you. It is an impressive operation. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be available for questions. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I'd ask for questions, comments from members of the committee. Not seeing any just for Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hello, by the way. Haven't seen you in a while. My question is, this expansion was something that was talked about well before COVID and the increase in sales that have occurred in this time period. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? How long has this thought been going on?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, good to see you as well. Thank you for the question. So we have been looking at our warehouse space for a number of years now, probably 4 to 5 years, and we had some experts in the industry come and do an analysis for us about 2 years ago, and based on the sales trends at that time, they expected us to be able to utilize our current warehouse through 2027. But like I said, the last couple of years, we've seen a much higher growth in sales than we had expected.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then I guess I would just be wondering, it looks like you're going from 100,000 square feet to 135,000 square feet. Was there a particular calculation for how much you needed to grow? Was there something that you were specifically aiming for?
Mr. Chairman, thanks for the question. Not exactly. The 35,000 square feet, I believe, is the space that we have available to build on at our current location. And rather than doing multiple expansions over the years, it was more economical to do one big expansion.
Perfect. Thank you. With that, are there any other questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much for your time here this morning. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
And with that, we are moving on to DNRC, I believe.
Yes, correct, Mr. Chairman. The next presentation is from Sue Clark with the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. Sue?
There we go. Good morning, Sue.
Hello. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sue Clark. The last name is spelled C-L-A-R-K, and I am the Deputy Forestry Division Administrator for the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. I am here to report on the department's Eastern Land Office facility and shop proposal, which is located on page 2 of House Bill 14. DNRC Forestry and Trustline Management Divisions share staff and locations throughout the state to deliver upon our respective missions. We implement our programs through a network of 6 land offices and several unit offices located all across the state. Our Eastern Land Office is in Miles City, and the space is occupied by DNRC's Forestry and Trustline Management Divisions, along with the department's Conservation and Resource Development Division. Our proposal represents an approximate 6,000 square foot office facility, along with a 2,500 to 3,000 square foot shop on 6 acres of state-owned trust land. There are both short and long-term benefits associated with this proposal, including enhanced access and adequate space to provide better public service to Montana citizens, more modern and efficient office space, including increased storage and conference room capacity, as well as the ability to centrally locate all Eastern Land Office staff and the opportunity to expand operations, which is especially needed during busy fire years. This proposed relocation will also greatly improve fire coordination, response, and delivery with DNRC's interagency partners, stakeholders, and the public by incorporating enhanced technology and necessary space to provide wildland fire training to local government and host other necessary public meetings. Specifically, the SHOC will allow DNRC the ability to better accommodate wildfire suppression resources during busy fire years, along with the capability to provide essential amenities like restrooms, shower facilities, drinking water, and vehicle washing capabilities in order to prevent the spread of noxious weeds. Lastly, it will allow for much more efficient and effective routine and heavy maintenance of equipment to include agency vehicles, county cooperative vehicles, and the county assistant team apparatus, all of which incorporates a plan for adequate winter storage on the recently acquired land. The proposed facilities will be adjacent to and co-located with multiple natural resource-related government agencies and partners, including Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, the Bureau of Land Management's Miles City Field Office, plus their Montana Dakota District Office, the Miles City Community College Agriculture Advancement Center, and the Miles City Interagency Dispatch Center, which will provide advantages to all agencies. While the current lease and the current space has been in existence for several decades, there are growing limitations and inefficiencies that hamper DNRC from providing the desirable services to the citizens of Montana. Currently, accessibility is challenging as there is minimal parking, which results in traffic congestion at times. And once inside the building, there is little to no room to meet in private with public citizens and interagency partners. Additionally, there is limited storage, which has led to utilizing the only ADA compliant restroom as a janitorial and office supply storage closet. Lastly, DNRC's current equipment compound resides offsite elsewhere on BLM property where all fire and other equipment is stored outdoors year round. With no shop to perform routine and time sensitive maintenance on program equipment, coupled with no water supply to fill and wash fire equipment at this compound, the agency's fire readiness logistics are impractical. Providing safe, comfortable workspace is vital to ensuring that our offices can continue to provide the services and resources that Montanans rely on from DNRC. Hospital 14 would provide the necessary funding needed to accomplish these efforts. With that, Mr. Chairman, I stand available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. That we would ask for questions, comments from members of the committee. Not seeing any here in person, nor hands raised online. Thank you very much for your time this morning here, Sue.
Mr. Chairman,
Still have the other ones to go through.
Report on Hospital 5, the major repair program or major repair project.
That's perfect. Sorry, I meant for that first project.
Mr. Chairman, how would you like me to proceed?
Oh, please go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Sue Clark, spelled C-L-A-R-K, and I am, again, the Deputy Forestry Division Administrator on behalf of the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. I'm here to report on two projects that exist in House Bill 5, located on page 5. The Swan Unit siding and house wrap and the Stillwater Unit shock remodel. At DNRC Forestry Division, our stated mission is to ensure the sustainability of Montana forests, rural lands, and communities through cooperative wildland fire protection, sound forest management practices, and by promoting a viable forest-based economy. We implement these functions through a network of 6 land offices and several unit offices located across the state. The Swan Unit is located between Big Fork and Sealy, and it serves as headquarters to 15 employees that implement mission-critical natural resource work that supports both the Forestry Division and the Trust Land Management Divisions at DNRC. There are five buildings on site, the main office, which much of the staff occupy, a bunkhouse for seasonal fire personnel, a fire readiness building for fire briefings and training, a shop and a conference room facility. The current siding on all but one of these buildings is over 50 years old and failing. Additionally, there is no wrap or airflow ceiling system, which creates ineffective energy standards and unnecessary exposure to the outside elements. The funding request of $210,000 in House Bill 5 would allow DNRC to replace the current siding and properly wrap four of the five buildings and add extra rigid foam insulation for increased energy efficiency. The Stillwater unit is located northwest of Whitefish and similarly supports both Forestry Division and Trust Land Management Division work within DNRC. There are four buildings used by staff and the public year-round, most of which were built in the mid-20s to mid-30s. These buildings were registered on the National Historic Register in 1981 and require special care and maintenance. Currently, the cinder block foundation is cracking and deteriorating on the shop, and the walls and ceilings of the building are not insulated properly. The funding request of $50,000 in House Bill 5 would allow DNRC to replace the failing cinder foundation and insulate the walls and ceiling to today's standards. Additionally, DNRC would install an efficient new heat source that will allow for staff to perform repairs and projects in colder months. Providing safe, comfortable workspaces is vital to ensuring that our unit offices can continue to provide the services and resources that Montanans rely on from DNRC. House Bill 5 would provide the necessary funding needed to accomplish these efforts. With that, Mr. Chairman, I stand available for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And with that, as my computer turns off once again, having a good time with it here this morning, we'd ask for questions, comments from members of the committee. Representative Hamilton.
Not here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Clark. Mr. Chair, Ms. Clark, I find myself being surprised that there is not, both of these are requiring LRBP cash, and I'm sort of surprised there's not a regular maintenance budget for these kinds of things and or a state special account that it could come from. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, you are correct. We unfortunately do not have the appropriation to support these projects. Currently, the Forestry Division is funded predominantly with general fund, while the Trust Land Management Division is funded with state special revenue. However, it is through legislative intent and earmarking for scale school trust lands, and so there are some limitations there without funding as well. Does that answer your question?
Thank you,
Chairman, yes. Representative.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions, comments from members of the committee? Vice Chair Cuff.
I'll quickly add that it seems like replacing a couple of broken windows should not have to come to this level, I don't think. But anyway, that's all, Mr. Chair.
Further questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, I would once again thank you for your time this morning. I would just say that MR40 is a pretty good deal. We're good to move forward? All right. With that, we are on to Department of Livestock, I believe, right?
Yes, correct, Mr. Chairman. Our next project being presented is for the Department of Livestock, the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab, and the Ag Analytical Lab. And here to talk about that is Mike Honeycutt and Ian Foley. Mike?
Good morning, members of the committee. Thank you, Chairman Hopkins, Vice Chair Huff. I know you guys have had several weeks of heavy lifting on these projects. Also with me today for potential for questions, just so I call that out, is our Chief Financial Officer and Deputy Executive Officer, Brian Simonson, our Lab Director, Greg Judah, I believe Dr. Greg Judah is out there, and our Animal Health Division Administrator and State Veterinarian, Dr. Marty Zalewski. And also present there today in the building, and we'll probably come in to make public comment statements are two of our Board of Livestock members, Lila Taylor, a rancher from Busby, and Nina Bacchus, a rancher from Wolf Creek, who will also want to speak to the project. The brief overview presentation for the veterinary diagnostic lab portion of this facility is just to give a little bit of history of how we got to where we are with the project today, and maybe a little bit of explanation behind the funding sources and strategy that we have to complete the facility. The current VDL is housed in Marsh Laboratory in Bozeman, Montana on 19th Street. It is a facility that is owned and operated. The Marsh Laboratory is owned and operated by Montana State University Bozeman. And we share that facility with several of our labs that are under the direction of MSU Extension. So that facility was opened in 1961. At that time, it was a state-of-the-art facility, and it has served us well. We have done several remodeling projects to try and keep that facility current over its long history in Bozeman, and to be able to complete good veterinary diagnostic work from that facility. However, in the past few decades, we have found it much harder to maintain our accreditation from the American Association of Veterinary Lab Diagnosticians. And the accrediting reports have called out our staff for doing great work at mitigating the challenges that are offered by the facility to make sure it does not affect the efficacy and quality of the work that they do. However, those accreditation reports that we get every couple of years have growing concern about how sustainable being able to continue to mitigate those problems is going to be long-term. We're dealing with much more modern equipment now than obviously we have been dealing with in the past. The test protocols that we operate are sensitive to temperature and other environmental conditions. And the HVAC, electrical systems, other mechanical systems of the building are very hard to retrofit to the standards that we need. And more importantly, we're dealing with incredible space limitations within that facility. I know there's members of this committee who I think have visited the veterinary diagnostic lab in the past, and you'll know that there is very few surfaces there that do not have some sort of piece of equipment or something on them. There are cords running all over the building trying to make this machinery work in the space that we have. And also probably more concerning is seeing flammable materials and biohazardous materials housed in the very areas where people are also doing their office work and administrative work. So there are some safety concerns that we have with that. On top of that, we do have an aging incinerator within this facility. So an incinerator is very important in this facility. We're dealing with large animal carcasses that we have to dispose of. And that incinerator is itself aging and has some mechanical and maintenance issues that we have been able to try and remodel. But there is some fire safety and worker safety issues with that. And obviously, without the ability to effectively deal with those tissues, it severely affects our ability to do large animal necropsy and pathology work for livestock producers and others around the state. I would also point out that the agents we're working with these days, we're doing a lot of brucella testing. That's really ramped up in the last 20 years. So we're doing about 100,000 brucella tests a year. That is still an agent that is on the select agent list. Some of the other chemicals and agents that we work with have very high sensitivity about the security of working with them and making sure that we keep not only our workers but the public safe. We are now dealing with CWD materials as we added CWD testing within the last year. And so the need to move to a biosecurity level 3 for this facility is very important to be able to continue to do our work. Again, that's another thing that in looking at it is we don't have the ability to retrofit that current facility to a biosecure level 3 type facility, which is why we are looking at replacement. So, all of those things have led to a lot of conversations. Most of you are probably very well aware that this has been a simmering topic in the legislature for more than a decade. And so I do want to give you a little bit of history to how we got to the project we're at now. I'll commend our Board of Livestock members. They began working on this very diligently as long ago as 2015, putting together a stakeholder committee, trying to bring other similarly situated labs like the wool lab that was under MSU Extension into conversations with university leadership. to try and find a solution or a long-term solution to this problem and replace the lab. Unfortunately, that effort coincided with the time that this department was one time only within its budget. And so as we headed into the 2017 session, there was not capacity to talk about a new lab. We were rebuilding the agency decision package by decision package. But as we went through those conversations and the necessary components and needs for a new veterinary diagnostic lab came forward, the legislature commissioned a legislative interim study that took place between 2017 and 2019 that actually proved to be very beneficial for us at the veterinary diagnostic lab. One, we had a very detailed analysis of what our current state was versus what the future state needed to be for that facility to be able to maintain accreditation and operate in the way that it should. That work was commissioned through architects who had built along with A&E, so I have to give them a lot of credit. That work was done by people who were very knowledgeable about these lab facilities that had built them in other states. They knew about the space components. They knew about the efficiency and flow. They knew about the type of mechanical systems that we would need to operate effectively. And so I think they did very good work, and I'm very glad that legislative committee produced that product, because we stand on the shoulders of that with the proposal that is in front of you today. The recommendation that came out of that study committee was that at that time they were unsure that potentially general fund or bonding should be aspects to be used in putting this lab together. So obviously we did not have a proposal going into the 2019 session, but with that recommendation from the committee, the legislature commissioned another interim study committee that has operated in this last biennium to look at and vet out what other options could be used to replace the VDL. Could we do a private lease to own type of situation? I will say the results of that committee, I think, found that one, leasing would be a more expensive option for the state, and also found maybe a lack of interest in the private sector with building such a specific type of building. This is not a retail location. It is not an office park that can serve many tenants. This space is built for a very specific purpose, and once built, really does not have multi-use type of capability that some of those projects would have that would draw private sector interest. One of the things we did during the 2019 session was to put together a House Bill 5 proposal. We put forward $100,000 of our state special revenue to do design work, to do visual renderings. All of that work has been completed thanks to Russ, Marina, and all that we worked with at A&E, using the same suite of professionals that the legislative committee used in 2017. So we sit here today with blueprints, with designs, ready to operate, ready to put on site once we get a site determined. Also in the background of that work was a lot of work being done by our Board of Livestock and our staff with stakeholder committees to talk about, you know, how would we finance this and how would the industry support us in coming forward to put some of their funds that they pay into the department into this building. And so that's why also I should point out that at the same time that was happening, the Board of Regents passed a resolution making it possible for a land lease with the university system should the Ag Analytical Lab that's currently on the campus at MSU and our lab that's currently in Marshall Laboratory be combined together in one new facility. The university would be willing to look at a land lease, or the university system would be willing to look at a land lease with us as a siting location. So the proposal you have today, at least on the Department of Livestock side, our $26 million of this $36 million proposal, we are looking at $13 million of our revenue investing in the building now and over time, and that money is derived from livestock producers around the state. We do feel comfortable with the $13 million in the LRVP funds that we're asking for. This lab, I should point out, has the only FDA-certified milk lab in the state, which is for the benefit of all citizens of Montana, making sure that the dairy products they consume are safe. We're doing quite a bit more wildlife work now in reference to publicly owned wildlife. And we also have a pretty strong mission in making sure we don't have animal disease make the jump to human population. So we're still working with brucellosis, which is one that we've been aware of for a long time. But some folks on this committee may not know that we do work with rabies, we do work with West Nile virus, we do work with a number of things that are helping us, not just in our animal health surveillance across the state of Montana, but are helping us in our public health surveillance across the state of Montana. So as I pointed out, and to conclude on the veterinary diagnostic lab part, this lab will serve a $2 billion livestock industry. I think it's been determined in conversations with our industry that this facility is very necessary to the livestock industry of this state. We do deal with some very challenging wildlife disease reservoirs here in Montana that we want to continue to keep surveillance on, that we want to keep quick turnaround times on. Many of you saw that the addition of CWD to the testing slate at the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab shortened FWP surveillance of CWD from 19 days to 7 days. And I think that's a very clear example of why we want to maintain these types of services within the state of Montana. There are future research opportunities with this facility. Some will know back in the fall, Senator Daines, along with then Undersecretary of Agriculture, Greg Ibaugh, did an event in Bozeman announcing some limited opening of brucellosis outdoor research in the greater Yellowstone region. We're the only one positioned with a lab testing for brucellosis within that region that has now opened up that outdoor testing, and so we think there are future opportunities there. We also worry about prioritization of our samples during a foreign animal disease outbreak. The best thing I can relate it to is what we saw with COVID. When you're trying to get rapid testing, trying to surveil, find out the problem you're dealing with and get quick solutions to it, when you're sending your testing samples out of state or unable to test those samples in an efficient manner, you lack the information you need to make effective decisions. The same thing could happen with foreign animal disease outbreaks such as foot and mouth disease or African swine fever, high path avian influenza, any of the things that we deal with in our animal health world that really could create significant disruptions to commerce and significant disruptions to our industry. We want to be able to get to those decisions quickly. We want to get our industry back in commerce as quickly as we can if we have to deal with one of those issues. We also, you know, have seen some surge capability in the last year that we never thought the veterinary diagnostic lab would have. We potentially could have done COVID testing at our lab. We would have had the ability to do that. It was decided not to do that, but we actually loaned some of our equipment to Public Health and Human Services, some extraction units that actually helped us catch up on COVID testing early in the spring of last year and get caught up with that. And so we also, our existence helps provide some surge capacity to other similarly situated facilities within Montana. So with that, you know, those are all the reasons that we think, you know, we want to move forward with this project. We think it's something that's been long overdue. But we do sit here today with what I would call a shovel-ready project. We need to site a location, and we need the financing structure in place. And we are ready to move forward with actually constructing that facility. So I and my staff and others will be available for questions, but I'll also stand back so Ian can talk about the Ag Analytical Lab.
Thank you for a very thorough briefing on that. And seeing no questions from the committee, I have just one kind of comment, that I assume this $36 million will be including some rather expensive equipment. Maybe not, but if it does, I passed some legislation 10 years ago that allows purchase a co-op purchasing program that I think MSU and UM both have frequently used. And although this is a state diagnostic lab, I would hope that we might be able to include that into that co-op purchasing program and save considerable dollars. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Representative Hamilton, that was a very thorough presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for pointing that out. The question I have, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Honeycutt, is the authority only. Could you explain just a little bit more on that? You were talking about livestock producers providing a lot of the funds that would be in that authority. Is that a fee for service, or is it donations, or could you flesh that out for us?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton. That will be mostly per capita fee. So that is the per head fee that livestock producers pay every year on their inventory. That is a large funder for the department. It's paid on all livestock species as described within Montana Code Annotated that are required to pay that. So that's livestock owner money. We also do collect fee for service within the lab. And so that fee for service that we collect for many of the things we do is also another mechanism that we have. That was actually established as a proprietary fund back in 2019. And of course, with the addition of CWD testing and maybe the addition of future services, I'd also call out Dr. Greg Judah, who's down there in Bozeman doing great work. I think is rebuilding a lot of confidence for state veterinarians and bringing a lot of business back to the lab. So we see that as part of that funding mix as well as the ability to use that fee for service to pay for those components. Again, that fee for service at the end of the day, yes, it comes from veterinarians, but it's probably deriving from livestock producers as well as where it's initiated.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Honeycutt. And we do have a number of others here that would like to testify. Come on up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, would it be all right if I...
I hope you do.
Thank you. Now I can breathe. My name is Lila Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, and I've been on the Board of Livestock since 15, and I'm about to be off the Board of Livestock. And I guess Mike has done a really good job of explaining the process we've been through. But I'm also a livestock producer. First, I want to tell you, I wouldn't be standing here if I didn't think that the department had our ducks in a row as far as our finances. And when I came on in 15, it was a pretty sad state of affairs. We've kind of righted the ship, I call it. And thanks to a lot of help from people in the legislature that gave us a chance to right the ship without shipping us off, I'll put it that way. I think we've done a lot to know that we can put the money toward the lab. And I'm an old enough producer to remember hauling calves to the lab in my younger years in the back of a pickup. And I've done it pretty recently in my older years. So the lab is a really important part of our industry. I know we've done all the studies about whether we can move things out of state. I think you take care of yourself the best by having your lab in your own state. You might have good service when things are going great in another state, but if we had an outbreak or some crisis, I think we're best served by our own lab. And Mike already stole my thunder about COVID, and since I've had it, I can tell you all about how important it is to have services in your own state. But I hope you look fondly at this. I really wouldn't be standing here if I didn't think we could afford what we've said we can afford. I know the as an old legislator, operating and maintenance was always high on my list of things that we should cover, and we have figured that into our financial numbers. So I think you see fit to help us along, we can move a long way. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
And thank you. And could you spell your name?
Lila, L-I-L-A, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R.
Thank you. And Ms. Taylor, I want to say thank you for your service. I know you had a very challenging job. I chaired Section C in 2013, and we pushed for all the work you've done. And thank you for your testimony this morning. You sure can.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Nina, N-I-N-A, Baucus, B-A-U-C-U-S, and I am a member of the Board of Livestock. And back in 2015, John Scully, who was on the board at that time, Lila Taylor, myself, Mike was there. There were some legislators there and quite a few folks from the industry who all got together and looked at the possibility of combining quite a number of labs together. As we've sifted down through that, it's ended up the Department of Livestock. The rest of them were pretty happy where they were, but we very much need a new building. Our building was built in 61. At a time when it has materials in it that are no longer usable in a building. Some have been removed. There are still some there. The HVAC system and many of the other things provide not the healthiest environment for our employees. So there is a safety and a health factor in the building we are in. But I agree with Lila and with Mike, and I don't want to take up a lot of your time because you're terribly busy. We need to get a new building. We need to be able to deal with whatever issues we have in our state. We have more things coming online all the time. In 61, we didn't know about chronic wasting disease. And it is a disease that is spreading all over our state. We need to be able to deal with it. It is in the livestock at this point, but in listening to other hearings from veterinarians outside of this state, it probably will stay in the livestock. And it probably will not pass to humans. But because it is a spongiform, it takes a long time from the time something is infected until it actually shows up. And there has not been enough time yet for it to be discovered whether or not it will pass to people. We need a lab so we have that available to us. We need a biosecurity level 3 so that we can deal with chronic wasting disease. And so as Mike said, and so as Lila have said, I hope you will look favorably upon this. I hope you will help us out. And we are more than willing to work from our end and come up with at least half the money to pay for this. And we appreciate your consideration. And also thank you very much for moving things along a little fast this morning. Being at the end of your schedule, we appreciate it. Thank you.
And thank you very much. And actually, you're in about the middle of our schedule. But thank you very much, and thanks for your service. And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ron Devlin, and the last name is spelled D-E-V, as in Victor, L-I-N. And I'm here today on behalf of the Montana Wool Growers Association. The Wool Growers Association is in strong support of the new diagnostic lab. This is a resource that our members rely on for all sorts of health issues that may come up. Ms. Taylor mentioned that she had personally taken animals up there to be diagnosed or whatever. A lot of time our members do not do that, but the information that comes out of that lab is available to our producers through the Extension Agency and other stuff, because it's very important that if something is out there that we can recognize the symptoms and then go ahead and correct it. And that's the sort of things that a resource like this diagnostic lab would be able to provide. So I think it's important to our industry, the entire livestock industry, that we have something that we can work on these things that are coming up. Because there are issues with disease transmission between wildlife and livestock, among livestock and things like that. Just a personal thing. Many years ago, my brother and I had an animal that was sick and we couldn't recognize the symptoms, and so we took her into the local veterinarian who was a friend. And a couple days later, we phoned up and said, you know, did you figure out what was wrong with her? And said, well, the animal died. And so I went in and was talking to him, and I said, well, what did she have? You know, is it something that I got to worry about? And the vet told me that she was a victim of dead cow disease. And so from a livestock perspective, we have to be able to do better than that. And this resource will provide what we need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Devlin. Next.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rachel Cone, C-O-N-E, and I'm here today on behalf of the Montana Farm Bureau Federation. I'd like to make my statement very brief. We've got a producer member that is on Zoom, and we'll give a great testimony. So I just want to rise today in support of the veterinary diagnostic lab. Like you've heard from many people today, this is a really important resource to agriculture, as well as the has a great interest to the public as well as wildlife in different ways to mitigate risks that come with diseases. The updates are necessary, and the Board of Livestock has spent and the department have spent an incredible amount of time trying to get a good plan put together. They did make an effort to reach out to Farm Bureau over the summer and present their plans, and we really appreciate that. And our board also agreed with that. So there's a lot of industry support behind this. So with that, I'll end, and hopefully you guys get to hear from our member on Zoom.
Thank you very much. Next. Step up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jim Steinbeiser, Steinbeiser, president of Montana Stock Growers Association. And also, I was asked to include the Milk Producer Association in their support of this bill also. So it's my pleasure to be in front of you today. You've heard some great testimonies, some very good points that were brought forward. There's been a lot of work in planning this. It's been many years, and by the Department of Livestock, by the Board of Livestock, and by all the producers throughout Montana. It has very broad support, and the whole industry, livestock industry, has been very engaged in from the beginning to where it is today. So why is the lab important to the livestock industry? Well, one, surveillance of statewide animal samples and potential disease outbreaks is critical. Without a state facility, samples would go out throughout neighboring states, and the lag time in getting those reports back is sometimes very critical. Timeliness is so important. Two, response to emergent diseases. It's critical, again, to have a quick response time, especially to new diseases we're not so familiar with. An example would be foot and mouth disease. We haven't had, thankfully, that experience for 100 years. But in foot and mouth, it is so contagious that hours have a huge impact on our industry with a good state-of-the-art lab in-state. That can be critical to producers. I'll hold up a handout, and I'd certainly be happy to leave them here if you're so interested. Here's four pages of diseases that affect the livestock and animal industry, and here's a report put out by the Department of Livestock that talks about a lot of these diseases and their impacts and such. So this lab is just so very important to us. Currently, there's 107,000 cattle in the DSA, the Designated Surveillance Area for Brucellosis. In fiscal year 2019, 88,000 brucellosis tests were conducted with a 98% compliance by producers. We think that's incredible. And brucellosis testing and the quickness it can be done is very effective to not slow down the speed of commerce. And having to go out of state would certainly slow down that. And the DSA continues to expand, so it becomes more and more important as time goes on. The Department of Livestock calculated the needs for the new lab would cost $26 million. And now it's a little higher now because the Department of Ag has included some stuff from their side. Of the $26 million for this lab, livestock producers are covering half of that. They have $7 million in cash from monies collected in the past for this project. It's important to point out that we feel the livestock industry can cover the bonding schedule if it is somewhat consistent with the Department of Livestock, their projections. Lastly, I'd just like to point out the benefits of the new veterinary diagnostic lab is for every Montanan. There's zoonotical diseases that affect humans, and that's why the general fund is included in some of this funding. With that, I'd just like to thank the committee for your consideration and ask for your support.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony and your personal information. Next.
I do have some written testimony.
Yeah, please, please hand them out. Yes, you may. Come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chuck Ryan, R-E-I-N. I'm a rancher from down on the east side of the Crazy Mountains, and my family's been there for generations. And I came today because this issue is personal to me. You see, my daughter and her husband, young couple, almost overnight lost about a dozen cows. Unknown reason. My other daughter, who's a veterinarian, took samples, had to send them out of state. All the while, this young couple is wondering if they'll stay in business. The turnaround time is critical, and we don't have the facility in Montana to remedy that situation. And that's why I drove to Helena to visit with you today. My daughter, the vet, says she sends samples off out of state 1 to 2 times a week, and she's a large animal vet, but she's not it's not a big practice. So you can imagine the amount of work that we are sending out of state. And that is another good reason for us to have this lab, is to keep these good high-paying jobs and these good minds in Montana. Agriculture in the livestock sector of agriculture is about a $2 billion industry, and we're asking to spend somewhere around $30 million to protect that industry. This is a good investment for Montana. It's a good investment for our number one industry. And for these reasons, I urge a due pass on this legislation. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for driving down from Crazy Mountains. Hope you don't get caught in too much snow. Do we have further testimony? Doesn't look like we have anybody coming in the door, so why don't you step up and introduce yourself?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Janelle Booth, spelled B-O-O-T-H, and I am the Government Affairs Director at Montana State University and the Legislative Representative for the Montana University System. And I'm here as an informational witness today. I'm available to answer any questions about the no-cost lease that was granted by the Montana Board of Regents for land that is on Montana State University for the purposes of this lab discussed today. Thank you.
Thank you. Any others in the room? Okay, I believe we have a couple of folks online that will be testifying, so not sure who's coaching people there, but we're ready for the folks online for testimony.
And Mr. Please go right ahead.
Oh, thanks. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ian Foley, F-O-L-E-Y, and I'm the Agricultural Sciences Division Administrator for the Department of Ag. I'm going to briefly introduce our chemical analytical laboratory and then turn it over to our lab director and bureau chief, Yona Varis, to describe the lab. Also with me is Deputy Director Christy Clark and Central Services Division Administrator Cindy Trimp to answer any financial questions. So the Department of Agriculture currently has an analytical lab located in McCall Hall at the northwest corner of Grant Street and 11th Avenue near the center of the MSU campus. The lab houses 8 full-time chemists and 2 part-time MSU student employees. The lab provides analytical chemistry services in support of the Department of Agriculture, MSU Ag Experiment Station, and fee-for-service customers in other states. The services offered include testing of over 2,000 annual samples for pesticides and verification of label claims on animal feeds, fertilizers, and in recent years, THC levels in hemp. The lab is ISO accredited in multiple program methods and is certified in forage analysis by the National Forage Testing Association, and very recently received Federal Drug Enforcement Administration diversion control registration to legally test cannabis samples. The lab building was constructed in 1952, and current deficiencies that have been identified in the project include security issues related to heavy traffic in the heart of campus, lab airflow and exhaust issues when using hazardous chemicals, a lack of general power and standby emergency power, inadequate safety showers, eyewashes, and egress areas, and finishes and surfaces that cause decontamination issues related to poor surfaces and that kind of stuff. And also the lab layout is not optimized for work and material flow through the lab. The lab is currently at maximum capacity for staff and equipment. For example, if the lab needed to add heavy metal testing for products for food safety, animal feed, or cannabis, the lab does not currently have the space or available power to add the required equipment. The lab staff include nationally recognized chemical experts and provide an invaluable service to protect Montana agriculture and the general public. And as Executive Director Honeycutt mentioned and the university mentioned, the Agricultural Analytical Lab is currently tied to the Diagnostic Lab by a University System Board of Regents resolution that includes the Department of Ag vacating our current location in exchange for the land where a new building would be located. With that, I will hopefully turn it over to Yona Vareth to briefly provide more details on the Analytical Lab.
Thank you, sir. And Yona Barrett, is it?
Thank you, Mr. Foley, and good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I hope you guys can hear me all. For the record, my name is Jonah Vareth, V-E-R-R-E-T-H. And I'm just trying to share my screen here. Let's see. There we go. Maybe not. There we go. Again, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to give a brief overview of the Analytical Lab. McCall Hall was built, as Ian was mentioning, in the early 50s, and our lab started occupying it in the mid-60s. Our work and methodologies have changed tremendously over these past decades. However, our mission, provide excellent testing services in support of our regulatory programs and protecting producers and consumers in the state of Montana has not. Currently, we have 8 full-time staff and 1 student intern working at the lab. Our regulatory work is split up according to the different programs we provide testing services for. Under the feed and fertilizer program, we analyze 340 feed samples and approximately 230 fertilizer samples annually to verify label claims. And of those 340 feed samples, we also screen about 70 samples for BSE, or better known as mad cow disease. Under our pesticide and groundwater programs, we analyze approximately 140 samples, enforcement samples a year, and approximately 200 samples for a groundwater program. Each of those groundwater program samples can get up to 3 different screens, one being our multi-pesticide screen, including over 100 pesticides and metabolites used in the state of Montana. And then we also have a nitrate screen and a glyphosate glufosinate AMPA screen that we utilize on these samples. In our hemp program, we analyze up to 240 samples a year. And that is to ensure total delta 9 THC levels are below 0.3%. And by the way, the pictures that I've provided, in this case on the right here, are all the instruments mostly used by each descriptive program. All the tests that we do for our regulatory program, we also provide to the public on a fee-for-service basis through our Ag Experiment Station connection. Most of our customers typically are farmers, ranchers, consultants, researchers, small feed and pet food producers, and other government agencies. Lastly, McCall Hall has considerable concerns and deficiencies that were highlighted in the combined state lab study report from 2018. And Mr. Foley already went through all these deficiencies earlier. So I will not take any more of your time than needed and go over those again. But anyways, for these reasons, a new lab facility in collaboration with the Vet Diagnostic Lab is urgently needed. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to present this brief overview of our lab. I'll be available for any questions you might have.
Great. Thank you very much. And do we have further folks online?
Mr. Chairman, I think that I see an individual that we might want to go to next. The name Redfield sounds familiar to me for some reason. I'm not entirely sure why, but that might be a direction for us to go.
Is this former Representative Redfield?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to thank the committee for allowing me to testify. My name is Alan Redfield, R-E-D-F-I-L-D. I'm going to approach the support for the lab from a different angle as a producer in southwestern Montana that's in the DSA. For those of us in the DSA, for us to move cattle out of the DSA to ship cattle to market, for example, for me to take a cow to Three Forks to the sale, they'll have to be tested at some point before we leave. The fact that the lab is there gives quick access so we can actually get this done in a timely manner. Every sexually intact animal from the DSA is tested upon leaving. So this is, as you see where they came up with 88,000 samples, this is where it's coming from. We have had brucellosis in neighboring herds. When that happens, they draw a circle from that herd out a couple of miles, and everybody in that circle then has to bleed and test their cattle. And it's very advantageous to us that it happens in a quick manner, because when that outbreak happens, everybody's quarantined. You can't sell, you can't move. So if your cattle happen to be in the spring and you wanted to go to summer grass, which was outside the DSA, you wouldn't be able to do it. So those are some of the reasons that it's real important to us. Another one is public health on the rabies. That's crucial because of the people having to test and take shots, which is expensive, plus it's very painful. We just had a neighbor that got bitten by a bat, and by testing it, they were able to avoid some of the vaccinations that have to take place in that. So everybody else did an amazing job testifying. This is an important project for the state of Montana. The cattle producers are willing to step up, and those of us in the DSA are very interested in getting this done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Representative Redfield. Good to hear your voice. Did we have anybody else online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I believe that we had Kim, JM Peck, and Jake, if I am not mistaken. So whatever order you'd like to take that in.
Ken, are you ready to go?
Kim, can you hear us?
This is Kim Mangold.
There you go. Please go right ahead.
All right. Great. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kim Mangold. That is M-A-N-G-O-L-D. And I'm with Montana Farmers Union. I think the previous proponents have really covered everything quite well, but we want to put our support forward for both the veterinarian diagnostic lab and the ag analytical labs. These are critical projects that ensure the health and well-being of the agriculture industry. And with the largest family farm operations, representing the members of those largest family farm operations in Montana, we believe that this is very important and urge you to fully fund it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And what was the name of the other person?
Mr. Chairman, we have Jake on the line, I believe.
Jake, are you ready to go? Are you wearing?
Yes, sir, I am. I want to thank the committee for allowing me to be here to talk to you guys today. Last name for the record is F-E-D-D-E-S. My family's been a ranching family in the Gallatin County for, well, since about 1925. I'm going to come to you from two different sectors of the livestock industry today. One is a rancher and one is a owner of a state-inspected meat processing facility. I'll start on the livestock side. We are in the designated surveillance area. So we test cattle very frequently. We run summer pasture inside the DSA and outside the DSA, so we are bleeding our cattle multiple times to test for brucella. And that quick turnaround time is really important to us. You know, just it gives us an opportunity to head that off. Also, last year, it's not funny, but we had a coronavirus outbreak last March in our herd, and we're spending $500 to $750 every day on antibiotics to treat those cattle. Our vet finally took samples, brought it to the lab, and within a very short amount of time, we had a reason back and got vaccines to treat those calves. Within 3 days, we didn't have to treat another calf for a month. So if you look at the 30 days that would have cost us in antibiotics, it was very important to us as producers to have that quick turnaround time. I think it says a lot that producers are willing to pay for half of this project. It shows a lot of commitment by the livestock producers throughout the state of Montana. And I think that says a lot for us. Executive Director Honeycutt talked about foot and mouth disease. And also Jim Steinbeiser mentioned it. We haven't had an outbreak in 100 years. If we do have an outbreak, that outbreak would devastate our $2 billion livestock industry. It's so contagious. And if we were to ship those samples out of state, chances are if we had it in Montana, other states would have it too, and they'd prioritize their own tissue samples ahead of ours, putting us at a major disadvantage to getting that taken care of. African swine fever, again, was mentioned, another extremely contagious virus that, if you look across the world, has devastated hog industries all over the world. So very important for us to be able to have those quick turnaround times on those different diseases. I think when you look at the milk, wildlife, domestic livestock, and the public health side of this lab, I think it's incredibly important to be funded and be able to move forward with a facility that puts us ahead of the game instead of constantly trying to play catch up on a building that has been out of date for 30 years. And it's time for us to just catch up for all those reasons. Looking at it from a state inspected meat processing facility side, we take tissue samples, blood samples on every animal that's processed under state inspection. Turnaround time on those samples would increase, which means we would have to hold on to carcasses that are suspect for different things for less amount of time. They take up, if they have to be condemned, they take up cooler space that could be used for animals that aren't condemned that are going out into our public for consumption. And I think when we look at what's happened to the meat industry since COVID hit and empty store shelves and how important it is for the state of Montana to have a robust state-inspected meat processing program. Turnaround times on those and being able to provide Montana consumers with Montana-grown meat is very important and has only been shown to be how important it is in the last year with COVID coming out. And so I just think this is a program that statewide needs to be funded and needs to be put in place for the good of Montana, good of the livestock producers, public health, and wildlife.
Excellent testimony. Thank you very much, sir. We appreciate your time, your thoughts. And I believe we're up to J.M. Peck. J.M. Peck.
Hello, can you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, distinguished members of the committee, my name is J.M. Peck, and that's spelled P-E-C-K. I stand in support of the funding for the Veterinary Diagnostic and Ag Analytical Labs. I am a cattle rancher from southwestern Montana, a member of Montana Farm Bureau Federation, and I serve on the Montana Farm Bureau Federation State Board of Directors representing young farmers and ranchers. This is a fitting conversation as I am delivering my comments remotely due to a global pandemic from a probable zoonotic disease. As a cattle rancher, I understand the importance of timely and accurate testing for veterinary lab samples to ensure the health and safety of our herds and food supply. I live near the DSA, and diagnostic testing is something we require and rely on a regular basis. We also see new challenges on the horizon, such as chronic wasting disease and other known threats such as hoof and mouth disease, which were already discussed. A new state-of-the-art lab will ensure that we can continue to uphold standards for quality and safety for years to come. Last year, I had the privilege to listen to leaders from the Department of Livestock, including Director Honeycutt, present their proposal for the new labs. Along with the Montana Farm Bureau Federation Board of Directors, I support their plan and feel it's important to note that in addition to the requested bonding, other funding will come through per capita fees, which producers pay annually. As a per capita payer, I feel this is a worthwhile endeavor and good use of our tax dollars. With state funding and our per capita fees, we can continue to supply the safe, nutrient-dense food to our state and beyond. And I'd like to thank the committee for your time and urge your support of the new veterinary diagnostic and ag analytical labs.
Well, thank you for your words. You did a good job. Now, Race King. Race King.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and committee, my name is Race King, K-I-N-G. We ranch here in southwest Montana, entirely in the DSA. And I really appreciate all those that have spoken support before me. And I'm going to try to just focus on a couple points of emphasis, at least that we feel like maybe you guys haven't heard yet. I think, first of all, the importance of just having a good diagnostics facility and a good program. As we trade and ship cattle to other parts of the country, which, you know, as we know, most of our livestock leave the state, really is up to those other states to determine whether we've got a good program and good testing facilities before they accept our animals. As you know, other states can require different testing or even, you know, not allow livestock to be moved if they don't deem what we're doing here in Montana as effective. And so I think that's important to bring out. And we've seen some areas that we used to market some feeder cattle on sexually intact females just kind of wither away over the years since the DSA has been established because of that, because another state vet having concerns. So we think it's super important from that. And then as far as having a situation where we can have a local testing facility, I think that can't be overstated enough. I'm going to give you an example. A few years ago, we bled about 800 animals in one day and was, you know, put it in styrofoam coolers, obviously working with veterinarian here locally and shipping that just to Bozeman from here in Dillon. And, obviously a lot of times we get our hands on these livestock. Our cattle graze on about 88,000 acres down here, so it's not real easy to just get your hands on them any day. But when we did, that particular group, we sent those samples to Bozeman, and when they got over there to read those, like almost 100 of those samples had froze in transit and were unable to perform the tests on those. So, you know, obviously when we do a lot of work, I mean, this was a large group of people and a lot of money and effort spent on these to get this done. We at least have the option with a region, with a facility close to us, to throw those in the backseat of our car and run those to Bozeman and ensure that those tests aren't frozen, you know, if we are testing in these, this cold weather. Once again, I think people before me have really pointed out all the benefits. I think our industry is doing a good job. We sure need your folks' help understanding how important that is to us, that work here with the livestock in southwest Montana and around our state. Would like to point out one other thing. It's really important that we do our job here around this DSA, because this work and this testing ensures that those producers that are not within this DSA are not burdened with these extra testing requirements when they go to ship and market their animals. And that's so important for these other areas of the state to feel confident that what we're doing is quality work. And so, and I think that's why the industry as a whole is so overwhelmingly behind this. So thank you for your time, and I'll be around if you have any questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else online? Is there anyone else out in the hallway? Could you check for us, please? If there's anyone else to speak on Veterinary Diagnostic and Ag Analytical Lab, anyone else online? Seeing none, I think we've had a tremendous amount of information here and some very sincere people appreciate everything that we've had. And we have, I think, 16 more projects to hear. So, but this has been a very big one, and this is a very big number that you're asking for. And I've been involved quite, actually, I think maybe it goes back to talking about these in 2011, if I remember correctly. So thank you all very much. I know it means a lot, and we're on a pretty good track right now. So we've got a ways to go, but thank you all very much. Stay in touch. It's any questions from the committee? We can go on to Terry Equipment. This is Montana Department of Transportation, Terry Equipment Storage Building. And return the mic. Yes.
Thanks, Vice Chairman. This is Marina Lill again with the Architecture and Engineering Division.
Just a minute, please. It's difficult. That's why I wear these hearing assistants. With my hearing aids, it's very difficult. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, now go ahead online.
Okay. This is Marina Little with the with Architecture and Engineering, and today we're going to hear the next group of projects is for the Department of Transportation.
Yes.
And Mike Morello will speak up for those projects. Mike?
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mike Morello. That's spelled M-U-R-O-L-O. And I'm the Facilities Bureau Chief for the Montana Department of Transportation. Mr. Chairman, as you see on the screen, Rita is going to share a slideshow we put together of some of our projects. The first project that I'm going to speak about, the repair and maintenance, probably changed it up a little bit, but it is not on the slideshow. But I'll start there if you don't have a problem with that.
That sounds great. Thank you, Mike.
So MDT's first request, outlined on page 102, we are requesting $2.3 million in authority for statewide maintenance, repair, and small projects. The department manages over 1,100 buildings with an insured value of more than $200 million. To keep these buildings functioning in a safe and efficient manner, this authority is critical to maintain the department's aging inventory. These projects typically include roof repairs and replacements, ADA upgrades, window and door replacements, heating and ventilating equipment upgrades, lighting upgrades, and just general overall building maintenance. The small projects portion of this request is for shop extensions, covered sand storage structures, loader sheds, office additions, and wash bay facilities. Unless the committee has any questions, I can move on to MDT's capital requests.
Do we have any questions from the committee at this time? Not seeing any. I think we are good on our end, sir. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. So I'll go through the next projects. They're the equipment storage buildings and a couple of welding shops, and then I'll open up your questions when I'm done. So the buildings I'll be discussing today all have exceeded their useful life, and frankly, modern MDT equipment continues to get bigger and no longer fits in the existing buildings, making it difficult for MDT staff to perform critical pre-trip safety inspections and routine maintenance on our equipment. You can see in the photos as we go through the slides, in many cases, the plow is touching the front of the building and the sander barely clears the overhead door, and sometimes just getting the snowplow into the facility is a challenge. You need to open a large overhead door just to walk around the truck or to complete the required inspection, and that in itself is inefficient. MDT is very safety conscious, and these inspections are required to ensure that our equipment is safe to use. The new equipment storage buildings feature a radiant floor heating system to aid in melting the snow and ice that is built up on the underside of the equipment. To help identify problems such as broken or cracked plow frames, missing or broken bolts, or any other issues that may turn into a hazardous situation. I can now move to the requests for each location. So the second request, Mr. Chairman, is on page 154 of your book. It's for equipment storage building in Terry. We are requesting $400,000 in authority to replace the existing building that is more than 50 years old. The new three-bay building would only need to house equipment. Section staff will continue to use one of the existing buildings, as you see in the photo, for the office and break room facilities. Next request on page 155 is for a new eight-bay facility in White Sulphur Springs. The department is requesting $1,250,000 in authority to demolish the existing building and build a new facility with an office and restroom in the same location. You can see in the photo how tight a fit it is to maneuver the plows around the columns. And this is also a good example of MDT's modern equipment, of how the plow on, I guess, the left-hand side is almost touching the wall. With the older truck, there's a couple feet, probably 3 feet in front of it. Request MDT-03 on page 156 in the amount of $825,000 authority is to construct a new five-bay facility like the one you've seen on the last page of the slideshow. The new five-bay would be located at the current site off Highway 1. Existing buildings would be removed, and the new facility would incorporate a drive-through design. The next request, MDT-04, on page 157, also in the amount of $825,000, is to construct a similar five-bay building at MDT's Custer site. The current facility is aged, and as you can see, it also lacks adequate space for staff to walk around the trucks, and the plows are almost touching the work benches. Mr. Chairman, the next two requests are both for replacement welding shops. The first, on page 158, is a $400,000 authority request to replace the current Haber welding shop. The next, on page 159, is a request of $650,000 to construct a new welding shop that would also incorporate a tow plow storage building at the district headquarters in Billings. Neither welding shop is large enough to get a fully equipped snowplow inside to make the necessary repairs to keep MDT's fleet safe and functional. Most of the repairs that need to be done either require major disassembly or they are worked on outdoors. As you can see by the photos, both shops lack adequate ventilation and lighting, creating a hazardous work environment for MDT's maintenance staff. The Billings facility would also have a bay to store tow plow to effectively melt off snow and ice to enable staff to conduct the required pre-trip inspections, as I mentioned earlier. The department has deployed 28 tow plows within the last few years, and finding places to park them indoors has been an ongoing issue. I will move to the last equipment storage building request. So MDT-07 on page 160 for $950,000 is for authority to construct a new six-bay facility in Harlow. The department would relocate this facility to a new site that could house sanding materials and the equipment storage building in the same location. This would increase efficiency by having sanding materials housed at the same location as the staff and equipment. Currently, sanding material is located across the railroad tracks from the shop, causing delays of up to 15 minutes. The current site would no longer be needed by MDT. Do you have any questions of the committee on these projects?
Thank you. With that, I'd ask members here in the room for their questions, comments. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Morello, could you explain, these are all looking like they're coming from state special revenue and no federal monies, I assume. How is that state special revenue account funded?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, that is correct. The state special, these are all projects with state special revenue that is funded by state gas tax dollars.
Follow up.
Does that answer your question?
Follow up.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Morello, yeah, I think mostly it does. My question is money that we get from a federal special cannot be used for this purpose? Is that true?
That is correct, Representative.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. We'd look online really fast, but I am not seeing any hands being raised. With that, I think that we are good to move on to Lincoln Airport, if I'm not mistaken.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. Tim Conway with MDT's Aeronautics Division is here to present these two projects. And Tim, thank you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Good morning, committee chairman and committee members. My name is Tim Conway, last name spelled C-O-N-W-A-Y. I'm the administrator for aeronautics for T. Starting on page 161 of the long-range building document, I'll review the change packages for Lincoln Airport and Yellowstone Airport. Start with priority MDT-08, Lincoln Airport Snow Removal Equipment Storage Building. I'll just run through both of these and then take questions if that's okay, Mr. Chairman.
That'll work great for us. Thank you.
Thank you. This is a one-time only request to provide design and construction of a snow removal equipment building at the Lincoln Airport. This request was accidentally left out of House Bill 5, but should appear on page 9 of the bill and will be addressed through an amendment by Architecture and Engineering. Aeronautics has requested authority to purchase snow removal equipment using 100% federal funding under House Bill 2. Acquisition of a purpose-built snowplow will enable airport personnel to efficiently maintain the airport during winter weather conditions. This House Bill 5 request will provide the shelter required by the Federal Aviation Administration to house that equipment. Both the equipment and the building will qualify for 90% federal funding through the Federal Aviation Administration, and the 10% match will be offset by the CARES Act fund. This essentially has no cost to the airport or to the state special revenue fund, 100% funded with federal dollars. Moving on to the Yellowstone Airport Terminal, MDT-09. This request to provide an additional $10 million of authority to construct a new Yellowstone Airport Terminal building. At the last legislative session, this committee approved $14.7 million in authority for this project. The additional request is for an expanded scope based on the needs of the airport and the opportunity provided by CARES Act funding. The scope now includes a revenue-generating hangar and water and sewer extensions, possibly to the town of West Yellowstone. That concludes my presentation. Are there any questions on either of those projects?
Thank you, sir. With that, we'd go to questions, comments from members of the committee. I'm not seeing any here in the room, nor hands raised online. So I think that is good. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And then I believe with that, we are moving on to Department of Corrections.
Yes. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The last agency we're going to go through their project requests is for the Department of Corrections. And here to speak on the first two projects is Jim Salmonson from Montana State Prison. Jim?
I'll give Jim a second there to get set up. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. A couple of items that are very much needed for Montana State Prison at this time. The first one I'd like to talk about is very glamorous one. Combination units of a sink toilet unit that are currently in all of our high side buildings. These units are the original units were put in when the facility was built in the late 70s and mid 80s. As you know, things have changed, and now there's a more modern, better stainless steel combo units out there. The ones that are in there now outlive their operational life cycle. Between constant usage and hard water here at MSP, these combo units are beginning to fail, or they've been failing for several years. Our maintenance staff has done a remarkable job of keeping them functional. When if one of them starts leaking or is malfunctioning, it's not wait until tomorrow to do it. It's an immediate effect because all of our cells are occupied. Replacement of these units will be with a more modern correctional combo unit. It'll have low flow valves that'll aid in water and utility consumption, maintenance, and an overall operational cost savings. The next item is a new boiler system and controls for our F unit. F unit used to be the old boot camp, and since then it's been remodeled a couple different times, and the boiler has never been touched. It's the existing boiler is beginning to fail. It's the boiler that heats the hot water for domestic use, along with heating of the water for the heating system within the unit. The existing boiler is leaking and becoming difficult for operational aids, and parts are not readily available for this boiler. Our maintenance department has done a remarkable job again, fabricating parts to keep this thing operational while we have inmates in that unit. A new high efficiency boiler will be installed along with new efficient heat pumps that will circulate water within the heating system. This new boiler system will reduce our energy consumption and meet current code requirements. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation, and I'll be available for questions.
Well, thank you, sir. With that, we'd ask for questions, comments from members of the committee. I'm not seeing any here in the room. Just for my own clarification purposes, when we are looking at the replacement for the fixture cell combo units, what is the multiple of that?
Oh, I was going to grab that. There's, I think there's upwards of 100. I don't have that figure in front of me.
That's okay.
It'll be replacing within 4 units.
Perfect. That'll do fine on our end. And I know I have it in a book somewhere. I just don't happen to have the book on me at this moment. So, no, that works perfectly fine on our end. Oh, perfect. Thank you. With that, I'd ask if there are any other questions, comments from the committee. Not seeing here any in the room, nor hands raised online. I think we are good, and thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Marina Little, LITTLE, with the Department of Architecture and Engineering Division. I've been working with the Department of Corrections and the consultant to complete a departmental master plan on the demographics and population and growth of the correctional system. We did complete the phase one of the master plan within the last 6 months. And what this funding will do will provide the funding to complete phase two of the master plan. And the ultimate goal when the two phases are combined would give us a new master plan with projections and deferred maintenance options and estimates and the best use of the facilities for the Department of Corrections for the next 20 years up into 2039. So with that, if there's any questions, I'll take any questions, but it's just, we're trying to streamline and clean up all of the functions and the facilities and that for the Department of Corrections.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Chairman.
With that, I would ask if there are any questions or comments here in the room. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Little, my question is, so the fee for... to the Department of Corrections for help with the master plan is really paid back to A&E? Is that correct?
Correct. A&E is, yes, correct.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Not seeing any more questions, Maria. I think that sounds good. And I think that we are good to move on.
And our next project is for it's out in Miles City, and it's the Pine Hills Youth Correctional Facility, and it's a door control system, and Steve Ray will speak on behalf of that project. Steve?
Perfect. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Ray. Last name is spelled R-A-Y. And I'm presenting on our door control system. The ongoing high cost of maintaining and replacing the existing components of the 20-plus-year-old security electronics would indicate that maybe transitioning to a touchscreen computer technology may at some point be more cost-effective, as this would eliminate many of the replacement parts that are frankly in need with the current system. This technology would also enable us to both monitor both the officer safety and inmates' location in a better manner. Current system operational longevity with the parts material that are on hand is estimated to be 2 or 3 years and would likely become incompatible after that. Upgrading the door control system would provide Pine Hills operational flexibility, and it would also consolidate multiple security posts on night shifts to monitor the population in a more cost-effective manner, and allow us to be flexible in providing coverage for different populations and different units. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions on that.
Well, thank you, sir. With that, we'd be looking for questions here in the room. Not seeing any nor hands raised online. I think we are good. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, our next one is another door control system, and it's for the Montana Women's Prison. And Jeannie Hansen will speak on behalf of that project. Jeannie?
And we will give Jeannie.
Let Gail in. She sent me a text. She wants to talk about the laundry amendment. So it's not in the book. It's amending the laundry equipment.
Well, wait a second for that to get set up.
Thank you. Yeah, got it.
Gail wants to say something.
Okay.
And Marina, did you have something else for us here as we wait for our next speaker to get set up?
Well, Russ was talking to me about that. I don't know if Gail is available. She would like to speak on the amendment for the laundry facility. Maybe if Gail, if you're available, can you chime in right now on that?
And I do see that we have Gail. Looks like still muted, but we'll give that a second to set up. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gail Butler, G-A-Y-L-E-B-U-T-L-E-R. I'm the Division Administrator for the Montana Correctional Enterprise Division of the Department of Corrections. The laundry program is under Correctional Enterprises. I'm here to speak in support for the proposal for the laundry equipment replacement that's being introduced as an amendment to House Bill 5. The current laundry was built in 1995 to centralize the laundry functions at the Montana State Hospital and Montana State Prison. The proposal is two-pronged. It is a request for $1.4 million in spending authority for the purchase and installation of the centralized laundry equipment, and we are requesting approval to apply for a $1.3 million Board of Investments loan to fund the equipment. The $100,000 difference would be paid out of existing MC industry funds. The Board of Investment loan will be paid back by a 6 cent per pound rate increase to our customers to cover the debt service. MC currently washes over 1.6 million pounds of laundry for Montana State Prison, Montana State Hospital, Montana Chemical Dependency Center, Montana Law Enforcement Academy, University of Montana Summer School, Riverside Special Needs Unit, and the Sanction Treatment Assessment Revocation and Transition, or START program in Anaconda. There are no anticipated increases in operating and maintenance with this equipment upgrade. We should see some efficiencies in electrical and gas utilities with higher efficiency equipment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm available if you have any questions.
Well, thank you, Gail. I'd ask for your questions, comments from members of the committee here in the room. Not seeing any, nor hands raised on time, or hands raised on time. Hands raised online. I think that'll be good for us. And thank you very much for your time. Got a little bit of a question here on who I go to next. I see a couple extra people have plugged in. However, I did see that the good senator had her microphone off or unmuted there for a second. So I just want to make sure that I didn't skip over that. And sorry, you'll just always be a senator in my heart, but good morning.
Good morning. This is Cynthia Wolkin. I'm the Deputy Director of the Montana Department of Corrections, And it looks like our warden Hansen at MWP might be having some difficulties, so I can go over that project if need be.
Perfect. Why don't we go ahead and have you do that, and then we'll catch Hansen right afterwards.
Okay. So members of the committee, the next project is for the Montana Women's Prison in Billings. The Montana Women's Prison began as a youth detention facility. A portion of the building, what we refer to as the old part, does not have an electronic door system, so every room has to be hand-keyed. The new part of the prison door control system was installed in 2010, and the electronic security door control system continually fails. Because of the age of the system, replacement parts are not available. The control panel operates all security doors in the building, including those that separate the six housing units from the common areas of the building, and the doors to all administration doors and the entrances and exits within the building. So due to the system being contracted with an out-of-state contractor at the time, the Department of Corrections IT department is unable to work on the data sources of the system. So it's essential for proper emergency and security functions to bring these electronic security doors back into full use and to install the door system into the old part of the prison. Thank you.
Perfect, and thank you. Before we move on, I'll just say that I know you're doing good work over there, but darn it, we miss you over here, so feel free to come say hi every once in a while. With that, I believe that we have Hansen on the line. I see that we're still muted, but maybe give that a second here. Otherwise, Marina, I think I'd turn it back over to you for a direction on to who we go to next.
Okay. The next project, Mr. Chairman, is for the Xanthopolis building, or the X building as we call it, over, and it's on the Montana Hospital, or the Montana, or the mental, I'm sorry, Montana State Hospital. And it is part of Department of Corrections, and Megan will speak on that. And again, it's another door control system. Megan?
Thank you, Marina. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Megan Coy. That's M-E-G-A-N-C-O-Y. I am the Programs and Facilities Bureau Chief at the Department of Corrections. As Marina said, the Dr. X building is located on the Warm Springs campus. It has been used and managed by the Montana Department of Corrections through an MOU with Department of Public Health and Human Services since 2002. And prior to that time, it was considered part of the state hospital. We currently use the facility for our treatment programs related to 90-day substance use treatment and DUI treatment. The electronic security door control system that was existing in the facility at the time that MDOC took over use of the building also continually fails, and because of the age of that system, replacement parts are not always available. The control panel operates all of the security doors throughout the whole facility, including those that separate the housing units in different programs from the common areas, and the doors to all security offices and stations within the building. These doors have been manually operated since the control panel has stopped working, and it's essential for us to maintain proper emergency and security by bringing these electronic security doors back into full use. I'm available for any questions if the committee has any. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. And with that, we would ask for questions, comments from members of the committee. Representative Hamilton moving a hand up.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but I just have to ask, where did the name come from?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe that Dr. Xanthopoulos was a physician or a psychiatrist at the state hospital a long time ago, but I'm not totally sure on that.
All right. Thanks for the guess.
Thank you very much. I take this moment here to make sure that we haven't missed anybody's testimony. So if there was somebody who was slated to speak but was having some audio issues or what have you, and go ahead and unmute yourself, and let's get that now if we could.
Mr. Chairman, we do have Hansen online.
Perfect. Yeah, go ahead and unmute yourself, and good morning / creeping up on afternoon.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jenny Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N. I'm the warden at the Montana Women's Prison. Our project is also a door system project. The Montana Women's Prison began as a youth detention facility, but that portion of the building we call the old part of the prison does not have any electronic door system. All of our cell doors have to be manually keyed, which can be a risk to the inmates if we can't get in there. There is also no way for them to communicate with our control system. The new part of the prison control system was installed in 2010 by an out-of-state company. We no longer have that ability to communicate with that out-of-state company. And therefore, when we have failures in there, we have no way to repair it. Our IT department has no way to get into our system and repair it. So it's essential for proper emergency and security functions to bring these electronic security doors back into full use and to install the door system into the old part of the prison so that we can provide safety and security to the entire prison. And I am also available for any questions.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. With that, I'd quickly ask for questions here in the room. Not seeing any nor hands raised online. Glad we got the audio problems worked out, and thank you very much for your time here this morning. We appreciate it. With that, if there are folks out there in the hallway, I believe there's at least one of them, you might want to start preparing to bring yourself into the room here. We'll look to capture general proponent, opponent, general testimony here when we are finished with that. Marina, are we at the end of our projects here for the day? I think we are at the
Sir
end
Chairman,
of our projects.
Yes, we are. We're at the end of our project.
All right. Well, while we wait for possibly somebody to filter from the hallway, and Representative Hamilton, would you mind running out really fast and seeing? I think we have at least one individual that was sticking around with us throughout the day's hearings looking to come in here and testify before we close up shop for the day. With that, Kathy, I would look to you to see if you have anything to catch us up on. I know we still have to have a little bit of a talk as a committee, but I'd probably wait until we have Representative Hamilton back in the room to do that part. Outside of that, do we have anything else?
No. And so when we get all the committee back, we can talk about where we go from here, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. And is there anything else from our extended family online who has been testifying before us today? All right. Seeing none, I would go ahead and open the podium up to general proponent testimony for the things that we have covered here today, or since we're on House Bill 5 and 14, either of the bills in general. And we'll go to individuals in the room. Why, hello there, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have been waiting with bated breath all morning for this moment. Well, thank you for the hearing and the many hearings that you've had on this bill so far. I'm Bridger Malum, for the record, M-A-H-L-U-M. I'm here before you representing the Montana Chamber of Commerce, and as a member of the Board of Directors for the Montana Infrastructure Coalition, I'm also standing here on behalf of the Executive Director of that organization, Daryl James, who wishes he could be here but had a personal matter come up. And basically, and to House Bill 14 specifically, we're offering general support on behalf of both of these organizations for this bill to continue to move forward through the process, knowing that there could be some changes along the way, and there's obviously a lot of due diligence going on with this bill. Because infrastructure investment is a priority for both the Montana Chamber and obviously the Montana Infrastructure Coalition, and that investment and maintenance is critical to maintain productive commerce throughout our state on all fronts. And so especially the water and wastewater projects that are included in House Bill 14 are going to be really important to keep going and going forward. So with that, and also, of course, with favorable interest rates the way they are, we would see this as a prudent fiscal move as well. So with that, we would like to register our support today, and thank you.
And thank you, sir. And I would do one more check online for anybody who is looking to give any last minute testimony here before the committee today. And my little screen closed. Let me make sure I'm not missing any hands. Not seeing any hands. Kathy, I believe that is all of our hearings on House Bill 5, so we should be in a position to close on House Bill 5 before we talk committee business. Does that sound about right to you? I see a thumb going up, so what I'm going to do is go ahead and hand the gavel over here to our esteemed Representative Hamilton, and we shall move to close on House Bill 5.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Sorry for the interruption. I just wanted to thank you and Vice Chair Cuff and the committee members for allowing us to present the long-range building program. And if there's anything that we can offer in assistance and answers or questions to any of these projects as you're going through stuff, please get in touch with Russ or myself. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, and I guarantee you that we will be getting in touch with you. And we'd like to thank you for guiding us through the entire process. You know, this is not a the smallest bill to cross the legislature in any given session. So having you folks there to be able to walk us through is unbelievably helpful. So thank you very much.
Representative Hopkins, would you like to close on your bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, this is going to be short and sweet. We're obviously going to be having significantly more conversations around both House Bill 5 and every other bill that we have in front of the committee, and then those conversations will extend over to House Appropriations and to the whole House floor as we start making our way throughout the legislative session. I don't think that I need to add a whole lot to the importance of projects that you have heard within House Bill 5. We have certainly had individuals both from administering departments as well as individuals testifying in person and online who have spoken to the importance of those projects. I would simply close on House Bill 5 and move the committee to our conversation as we end here for the day. Mr. Chairman.
And Representative, before you step away, will we be closing on House Bill 14 as well?
There's a question that I would go ahead and ask Kathy about. Kathy, you got an opinion on that one way or another? Not that I'm in a position up here at the podium to be asking you questions necessarily.
I believe it would be an appropriate time to close 14 as well.
Mr. Chairman, at your pleasure.
Or just a moment, we'll close on House Bill 5 now. Representative Hopkins, would you like to close on House Bill 14?
Mr. Chairman, second verse, same as the first, I would close on House Bill 5. Or 14, that is.
We've closed on House Bill 14.
Now my computer has decided to turn off once again. So before we break up for the day, having been through all the testimony for House Bill 5 and House Bill 14, really fast I see that we have Russ back on and he is unmuted. Russ, did you have something for us?
Just to echo Marina's comments, sir. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you as well. So this being the last hearing on House Bill 5 and 14, I believe officially all hearings are done before the subcommittee. The plan, working plan starting from right now, is that tomorrow we obviously won't have any business in front of the committee, but really fast, let me confirm that with Kathy before we move forward. Kathy, no business before the committee tomorrow?
No, Mr. Chairman, but, you know, I'm not quite 100% sure on how to manage tomorrow, given that we did have kind of a potential hearing day slated on our schedule. So there may have been others who signed up to come in by Zoom tomorrow, and I don't think neither I nor Heather would have the answer to that right at this point.
Okay, and do we know the process that we need to go through in order to get that information?
Well, at about, you know, for participants on Zoom, they are allowed to register up till noon today. So sometime after noon today, then Heather gets a list of folks who want to participate by Zoom tomorrow. So, you know, I'm not sure what to recommend.
'Tis the session that we find ourselves in.
Mr. Chairman.
Heather,
sorry for the interruption.
Go right ahead.
Okay. I was just looking over the emails I have received thus far that are on our little testimony request form. I have three names on there. Those three names, I think, made it to today's hearing. But I do have one email that has come in during this hearing for a name I do not recognize to speak for tomorrow.
Okay, well then, to start off with, I would ask Kathy this question, and then, depending on whether or not that works out, ask the committee in general. And the question that I would have is, procedurally, is it okay for us to suspend or cancel a meeting that we had scheduled for tomorrow when we possibly have one individual who had sent an email looking to testify, and for me as the chair to reach out to that one individual, capture their testimony for the purposes of the committee? Or is it probably a better idea for us to plan to come in here and gavel in, not exactly knowing what time that individual might be showing up, considering we don't have any scheduled hearings? Kathy, do you have any advice for us as we move forward?
Boy, you know, I'm just really, I do not have the answer to that. I think it, I'm just going to leave it in your hands as to what your decision would be related to that.
All right. Well, then, before the chair makes an official ruling, we'd ask Representative Hamilton if he had a preference on how the committee moves forward.
Mr. Chair, I think that any public testimony that we might have is always very important. We want to make sure it's heard, and so I have no problem showing up. If we have a 15-minute meeting, we have a 15-minute meeting.
Okay, I'm trying to think in my mind whether or not, because I think I have a couple of members who are anticipating that this might be our last hearing here for the week. So why don't we call it like this? Why don't we say that for right now, Long Range will come together tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. and just hold a, you know, open little bit of time for anybody who might not have been able to testify in front of the committee on any of the business in front of the committee to have an opportunity to come testify. Heather, if you can send me the information for the individual who had sent in the email, I will try to contact them to see that they know what the time is so that they're not showing up at 10:30 or 11 tomorrow thinking that they're going to get an opportunity to speak in front of the committee. And then for everybody who might be watching this out in TV land, why don't you try to be paying attention if you were looking to watch Long Range tomorrow and the testimony tomorrow. Pay attention to our online links on the off chance that I get in touch with the individual who said that they were looking to testify and find that that is not a necessity for tomorrow's business. We may very well be canceling that meeting that way. Kathy, does that sound fairly reasonable on your end?
I think that sounds reasonable, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, may I request that Marina, could you please stop screen sharing?
Oh, yeah, I didn't even look at that screen. And we will work on getting the screen sharing off. So while we are waiting,
I'm kind of craning my neck. You know, it's really kind of strange when you're on Zoom. Thank you, Marina. Because it's like, it can be just difficult. And what do I see more than I saw before? Only a couple more names. So, Mr. Chairman, you and I have spoken about this kind of procedural change that's going to be happening in relation to how we do amendments on the bills when you get to executive action. But I don't think there's a whole heck of a lot of legislators. I'm not sure all legislators are actually there in the room or on Zoom. And I'm wondering if should we try to hit that tomorrow?
Let's go ahead and cover it first blush right now. Again, we might not be having tomorrow's meeting, so I'd like to make sure that we at least have it here on the record for anybody joining us in TV land. And then if we are here tomorrow, we will, of course, refresh as necessary. But if you want to go ahead and throw out the basics now, I think that would be advantageous.
Okay. Well, for those members who are here, in the past, we have worked with actual amendments to the bills when we do executive action. And these amendments were, you know, drafted through the law system and edited and so forth through a whole long process, really. Bit cumbersome process, as a matter of fact, but we have gotten a new laws system this session, and Todd Everett, the head of the legal staff, has said that he would prefer that the fiscal division staff was not drafting amendments. So I proposed to the chairman that rather than trying to get our fiscal legal staff, who is Julie Johnson, to have to draft a set of amendments for this subcommittee, that maybe you allow me to work with what are not actual amendments, but instead we can just term as recommendations. And then once the subcommittee takes action on these recommendations, that I take that information down to your legal staff, Julie Johnson, and ask her to make up what by that point would be a committee report for the subcommittee. And then I would bring that back to you for your review. So in essence, a committee report from the subcommittee is what we end up with after executive action and after we do all the individual bills. Each one of them that has had changes ends up with a committee report that goes to House Appropriations for their approval. And this would just kind of, it would take away steps for me and add one small step for you in coming back and reviewing what we put together and making sure that everything you intended to have amended in the bill is included in the committee report, Mr. Chairman.
And one giant leap for mankind. Yes, 30,000 foot view, the basic way that it would work is that we would come in, which we have scheduled for Friday of next week. We would go through what would be the normal executive action process for the committee, everything procedurally operating as normal, with the caveat that the product that we are voting on is not the final product of the committee. It just has to be put in a more official format. Which we would then come back in, review, and finalize, or the chair would certainly ask us to finalize, whether that would be the Monday after the Friday that we take initial action or the Tuesday after the Friday that we take initial action. Representative Hamilton, does that all sound relatively sensible?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Duncan, I guess my only question about the process is, would we see these, what I'll call conceptual amendments, although they may be written down somewhere, I guess they'll be a little bit more than conceptual, ahead of time before Friday?
Representative Hamilton, yes. Yeah. So, and Kathy here can speak as well, considering it won't necessarily be me down there writing most of these things up, but I would anticipate it working the exact same as executive action works for the committee in the past, which is that from the point that we stop having hearings as a committee until the point that we come back recombined to actually vote on stuff, that entire time period is the recommendation slash amendment writing period. As that process is going on, anybody can get in touch with Kathy, anybody can get in touch with myself at any time to be able to take a look at whatever recommendation corrections/amendments have up to that period or up to that time already been written, as well as certainly I'm more than happy to talk to any member about the full slate of at least what currently have envisioned to be bringing forth before the subcommittee for our action. So yes, that should be incredibly workable.
And follow-up question then, Mr. Chair, is
yes.
I think we had two programs, at least two today, Department of Corrections and maybe one other, who said there would be an amendment to add another something anyway to the long-range building program. So are those in amendment form, or will they also come in recommendation form, or what are we looking at there?
Oh, a little bit of both. Oh, Kathy, please.
I did mock you up what we would be using as instead of like official amendments. It would be just the same as always, except I'm not going to be making official amendments. I would be making something that looks very much similar, but is not exactly that. And if you'll allow me to screen share, I mocked up one for you. Wait just a second here.
Yeah, and we can bring up the screen share. And just to put a pin in it for everybody who might be listening online but isn't familiar with the legislative process, and now that we have a picture of it, it literally looks the exact same as any amendment that any committee anywhere in the legislature that would be putting together. It's really just a technical title for what it is that is different. And then, Kathy, yes. Go ahead.
And Mr. Chairman, part of my desire in doing it this way is that I can get together with all of you like normal. I can put together your requests as you would normally see them, but we wouldn't need to go directly to Julie Johnson and request that she make up a whole series of amendments, which will ultimately just become one amendment. And so I can do some of the legwork to help her with what her job would be.
Exactly. So for the experience of committee members and for the experience of everybody who will be joining us online, it will, for all intents and purposes, be the exact same as their committee has experienced in the past, just with an extra step of us having to come back in, like I had said, the Monday or the Tuesday after our action to confirm our work in official amendment form. Kathy, does that sound about right to you?
Yes. And Mr. Chairman, then to answer Representative Hamilton's questions. You heard about two amendments this afternoon, or this morning, I'm sorry. One from Department of Corrections and one from Department of Transportation. These are what I've got here for my kind of mock-up is actually through the list of requests that have been made by the budget office to align with their December 15th recommendations. And so right here, you see where we would put in a project from the Department of Corrections laundry project that you heard about earlier. And I'm gonna scroll down a little bit. And right here, whoops, don't wanna do that. Hang on. Right here, you see the Department of Transportation Lincoln Airport, which was just accidentally omitted from House Bill 5. These were both pieces of the executive proposal. And in fact, everything in here are pieces from the December 15th executive proposal that needed to be amendments to House Bill 5. And so this is how it would look. but I would always have this watermark on here that says this is not an official amendment or this is a recommendation, not an amendment. What I didn't have up here in this first kind of mock-up is requested by line, and I can add that to this.
Mr. Chair, I apologize for interrupting, but I do need to leave. But this process looks fine. Looks like it'll be very, very similar to what we normally do. So, fine.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the committee experience will not be all different. Otherwise, I would just say again, ostensibly 8:30 a.m. meeting, but you know, I'll be keeping a look at things in case we're going to end up canceling it. That, Kathy, you got anything else for folks online here before we break up for the day?
No, Mr. Chairman, that was all from me. So I'm glad. I hope everybody is okay with this kind of process. I know it's a little bit different. But I think in the end, you'll end up with exactly the same thing. And it does require us to meet one additional time, which is not yet on our schedule. But
well, that's perfectly fine. We love being together, so I mean, any opportunity we get to spend some more time with one another, I think that the committee will go ahead and be taking that opportunity. So with that, do we have anything else from folks online for the good of the committee? Then before we leave, let's just go ahead and rehearse. We have ostensibly scheduled a meeting for tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. However, folks want to be paying attention online, as that meeting may very well be canceled, whether there is a meeting tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. or not. After that point, committee's hearings have indeed ended. The committee will be looking to come back together on the Friday of next week for initial action on these bills, action that will then be confirmed the following Monday or Tuesday with additional committee action. If that sounds good to everyone, we will go ahead and adjourn long range for the day, and thank you to everybody who came here to help us out with the hearings today and throughout the entirety of the committee's action time. I can't even imagine how terrifying it would be to go through without those folks there to help us. So thank you very much. Long range is adjourned.